This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, all your base are belong to us. It's-a-me, Jordan Duncan. Welcome back to another episode of Rank and File, and I'm excited about this one because we are back to basics. For the first time in a while, we are going back to the original format of Rank and File. If you are a new listener, first, thanks for downloading and taking a listen to us. We are a countdown show. Every month, we have a new topic. I'll bring in a panel of guests. We all make a top 10 list, and we count them down. We've kind of deviated from that for the past few episodes. If you listened last month, we actually just did a draft, just like WWE was doing this past week. We did our draft first, and we did our draft better. The month before that, I had three guests instead of two. The month before that, we weren't even on because of some scheduling issues. So we are back to the original format. I've got two guests with me tonight. We've all made a list of 10. We're all going to share our list, and we are all going to have a great time. I'm also excited because I've got two first timers on Rank and File tonight. One voice is definitely not first time for Place to Be Nation. He's very, very well known. Another one is getting his name out there, but it's the first time I've had him on any of my shows, and you know what? Let's just get to it. Let's bring my guests in, and then we will talk about our show and talk about each other a little bit. And when one of us hangs up, we'll talk really badly about each other. Our first guest is coming to you for the very first time. Well, maybe not the first time, but as far as I know, the first time on a brand new Yeti microphone. The peas are popping. It's the managing editor of PlaceToBeNation.com, Mr. Brad Woodling. Brad, welcome to Rank and File.
Jordan, it's great to be here. The peas are gone. This is the Yeti debut. I figured, you know, if we're going to talk about a subject that's really close to me, I mean, I may know this better than wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's a shoot. Not afraid to say that. we've got some big things in store. Year four, Place to Be Nation. We've already been rocking and rolling. Of course, Rank and File is on our PTBN pop feed. And that is a new thing here too. And this microphone and some new shows and things we have in the work for later this year is soon to come. So I am real excited to be here and talk to you guys tonight.
Cool. You know, Brad, when I first came up with the idea of Rank and File, and I don't act like it's a unique idea, a countdown show, but the idea I had was, you know, I think people who listen to Place to Be, they kind of hear the same voices, and I think of that as a good thing. You kind of get to know the names and kind of get to know the people. But I think it's cool to have people on shows not talking about wrestling sometimes. And you were one of the first names I thought of when I thought about what the concept of Rank and File is, because I think what we're talking about tonight is right up your alley. And so I think it's kind of cool to hear us talk about some things other than Roman Reigns, you know. So, but let's talk about our other guest. And I got a fun story about him after we bring him in. I've known him for many, many years. I would say close to a decade, if not over a decade, but we've never met in person. He's coming to us from the great, wonderful state of Illinois, which I will be in next month, so maybe, just maybe, I can meet him for the first time. It's Mr. Andy Helleen. Andy, did I say your name right?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
In Illinois.
I'm going to be in Chicago.
Oh, cool.
So, and I'm going to be checking out the new Saved by the Bell-themed restaurant that's shaped just like the Max and just like the Max, so I will definitely be there, so Andy, we've known each other for a long time, haven't we?
Yeah, going back like 10 years.
Yeah, something like that. If you guys listen to Lucha Undead, they've been doing a series interviewing Place to Be Nation people, and they did one with me, and they asked me how I kind of got hooked up with Place to Be, and it was through the old Scott Keith blog, which is how I know you. I knew you for many years just as a bad guy 21, I think, correct?
Yeah.
Was it 21?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that your age at the time? Or
I think no. It's just my birth date.
Oh. Okay. Cool.
I added the number on there.
Yeah. So you know, I was thinking about this earlier, and something we were talking about even before we went on the air, guys. We are like the last generation that will ever understand the idea of like knowing someone on the internet, but not like knowing what they look like or knowing what they sound like.
Right, or knowing them just exclusively by a handle that has nothing to do with their name.
Like your AIM name or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, it's funny, Andy, that now that I'm finally on a podcast with you, you're one of the first people that, I don't want to sound creepy here, you're one of the first people that I ever knew online where I heard your voice, because you do work in radio, and I remember one time you were on the old Blog of Doom, and you said, hey guys, I'll be
on the air tonight if you want to listen. I was home alone like I am tonight. And I said, sure, I'll give Andy a listen. I put it on your pulled up your website, and I heard your soothing, soft voice as I played video games.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah, there was one time that I think we had one of our buddies, they called in, and they requested a song, too.
Oh, really? Do you remember who it was?
Yeah, it was Kurt. I was doing like an all-request New Year's Eve, and he actually called up.
Oh, wow, that's really cool, man. So, awesome. So, I'm glad to have you on the show tonight, Andy and Brad. To go back to you a second, like I said, this one's up your alley. We're going to be talking video games tonight, and I'll explain in a second specifically what kind of video games. But you shared a photo with Andy and I earlier today. Maybe I'll throw the photo up on the Place to Be like article for this podcast. But it had me in awe. Tell us a little bit about your collection and your interest in video games.
Oh, and that was actually only a third of it.
Good lord.
Yeah, I've been collecting video games since 1993, and been playing them. You know, I remember sitting at my grandparents' house playing the Atari 2600, playing like Sears Baseball with both controllers in my hand. Like I would pitch with one and like switch to the other and hit, and then switch back and field and like play against myself at like age six. You know, and we growing up, we mainly were, you know, we had our Commodore 64 and then our Apple II, and like we always begged for a Nintendo and never got one right away, and then we had a Game Gear, which got me into Sega, which kind of segues into what we're going to be talking about tonight. And then I ended up, you know, getting my own Nintendo, like at like a yard sale or a big flea market. It was, you know, probably in like 93. And then from there was kind of always a couple years behind until late in the 90s. But I still have a lot of that original stuff, and that's the stuff that's been, you know, probably closest to my heart. And so I really was into retro video games and writing about them for quite some time, even before we started Place to Be Nation. That's actually what I was doing on the internet, so to speak, in quotes. People ask, you know, what were you up to? But and so I have a pretty robust collection that spans through the 2600 through to today's generation. I did a pretty big purge right before my daughter was born, just to kind of like stuff that I picked up that I really knew I would never want to play again.
Right.
And so, but right now still, I think I probably have over 1,000 games here physically and probably 12 to 15 systems. So my office is pretty cool. And then I also have a lot of DVDs too, which is why you see that in my bio at Place to Be Nation. I'm kind of a little bit of a hoarder, but it's pretty nicely organized. I will say that.
Yes,
so
was,
yeah, we'll get
the
some
picture
picks.
We saw was very organized. So maybe the parts you didn't show us is the,
no, the rest are like that too. It's not on the floor. I can't, you know, it can't be a mess. There are some rules in the house.
How often, now you do have a young child. So how often do you actually get to play these games?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've actually, one of the games on my list, just within the last month, I was spending like, you know, as soon as my wife would go to sleep, I would play for like an hour, hour and a half a night. And it seems weird to be like, I was playing a game from 1995 for like 2 weeks straight. I still do on the original hardware, and not as much, especially with actually not much to keep up with there too. Actually, I've been doing probably more with Ring of Honor and our Ring of Honor 50 Greatest Wrestler Ever project that we're working on too. So you kind of have to balance. It's a hard balance. I get pretty passionate about hobbies, and it's hard. It's easy to like fall in a big hole and then forget about other things you have right. going on, like work and other hobbies and
eating.
Other responsibilities. Yeah. So I try to manage it. So I don't play as much as I probably used to, or probably do more collecting than I do playing. And sometimes I've kind of tried to make that shift. So I don't do too much anymore from like an old school gaming collecting standpoint.
Hmm. That's still very cool. Good to know. Andy, how about you? You're probably like, well, now I have to follow that. But like, do you still have any of the old systems or anything like that?
Yeah, I have like the Nintendo systems in a big like Rubbermaid like tub.
Sure,
just haven't tried to play them in a while, but I still have them.
I still have the original Nintendo. I have a GameCube, and I have the Donkey Konga drums with my GameCube. The one I really wish I still had was my Sega Dreamcast. I don't have that anymore, which we'll talk about in a little bit, probably coming back from the break, something that I really loved about the Dreamcast. But hey, guys, let's talk about our topic tonight. Obviously, we're talking video games, but what kind of video games are we going to talk about? Because video games are a very, very vast topic. There's a lot out there. So what we decided to do is go back to our childhood a little bit. I think we're all pretty close to the same age to where we played a lot of the same systems. And we are going to rank our top 10 16-bit video games. Our favorite games from the 16-bit generation, which would be Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. If you were lucky, maybe a TurboGrafx-16. I never had one. In fact, I don't think I've ever played one. Brad, how about you? Have you played the TurboGrafx-16?
I have. I have in Japan, it was called the PC Engine. I have a PC Engine Duo R in my collection, which is the CD and the cart one. It's actually modded to play both English and Japanese games.
Wow. Cool.
It's a cool little system. I'll tell you what, it's a nice little library. If you're into certain genres like shooters, it's not for sports, but platformers and shooters has some of the best from that time.
I had one friend growing up. We always wanted to try it, but he never really had many games for it. He had a Neo Geo, if you remember that system.
Yeah, that was actually one of the systems I sold off before my daughter was born. Yeah. Because... And you know what? That's a system that it always appreciated. So when I bought mine in like 2010, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sold games 4 years later and got like three times as much, even in just 4 years. Wow. So,
ever knew one person that ever even had one. So Les Somerville, if you're listening, thanks for letting us try your Neo Geo.
I'm sure he's listening. I'm sure he's a fan of the show.
Yeah, well, he's my friend on Facebook. Maybe I'll tag him in this. I don't know.
I would like to hear his Neo Geo story. Yeah, so that's a cool system to have. I mean, that is the Porsche.
Yeah, it really was. And it was like you kind of pictured like your rich friends having it, and he certainly wasn't. So I'd like to know the story of how he even got that Neo Geo. So anyways, guys, we're going to be ranking our top 10 16-bit games. Obviously, Neo Geo games will not be on my list. Neither will TurboGrafx. Mine is pretty exclusive to the two main consoles of that time. And I'm guessing, it doesn't really matter, but I'm guessing that's what most of our list will be. But before we get into our list, let's just go over the rules real quick for anyone who might be listening for the very first time. We will rank them from 10 to 1. We'll share from 10 to 1. A number 10 entry gets 1 point. A number 9 entry gets 2 points, all the way down to a number 1 entry, which gets 10 points. I'll be keeping tally all along, and then at the end, when all three of us are done sharing our lists, I'm going to add up all the totals, and we will reveal the official Place to Be Nation rank and file top 10 16-bit games as voted on by the three of us. Sound good, guys?
Sounds good.
Cool. All right. Well, before we get into the list, we always take some time for some honorable mentions, some games that maybe just missed the cut that you'd like to talk about, you know, like personal favorites or something like that. So, Andy, do you have any games that just missed your list?
Yeah, I'm going with Super Street Fighter 2.
Ooh. For which system specifically? Super Nintendo?
Yeah, Super Nintendo.
Yeah, Super Street Fighter for Super Nintendo was a really, really good game. Did you play it in the arcades as well?
No, I just played it at home. I used to run it a lot.
Yeah, okay. Well, who was your go-to character then?
It was the green guy. I forget his name. Was it like Blanca?
Oh, it was Blanca, yeah. Okay, so you would electrocute people and fly into a ball. Throw yourself at them. Yeah, I think everyone has a lot of experience with Street Fighter 2. Brad, how about you? Who is your go-to character in Street Fighter 2?
Ryu, mainly because like the only thing I could do is throw fireballs. Like, I like video games a lot, but I can never say like I was exceptionally good at them. Mm-hmm. Like outside of sports games. So, I like Street Fighter 2 a lot, but I just could never say like I was particularly good at it, or just my friends were just really, really good at it.
Yeah, that's what I hated about Street Fighter is I could beat the computer. But then my friends would come over and play, and they'd always kill me. I sucked playing my friends at those games. So, but my go-to was Zangief, the big Russian guy who would do like power bombs and stuff. That was my favorite character to use. So I think we can all agree that our least favorite was probably Dalsim, the Indian guy whose arms would stretch, right? Can we agree that's the worst one?
I mean, as a beginner, I could see some value in him because it was like, look how easy it is to have my legs fly across the screen and make contact, so.
Yeah, but at the same time, you just feel bad using that guy, even if you win. So, but not a bad choice, Andy, Street Fighter 2. Brad, how about you? Give us an honorable mention.
Yeah, so I have two honorable mentions. The first one is actually, it is from the TurboGrafx-16. It's Blazing Lasers. Real early in the system, it's a shmup vertical shooter. It's also Kanye West's favorite game from the TurboGrafx-16. A couple months back, he tweeted about, like, he was, like, reminiscing and being nostalgic to having a TurboGrafx-16 and how Blazing Lasers was awesome. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to make sure I put this in as an honorable mention. It is one of the physical carts I have for that system still.
Wow, I've never played that game, but I'm glad we're on Kanye's good side because...
Right, I'm sure he's listening, so I just want you to know, we are in sync, and I wanted to throw that out to him.
But if Taylor Swift is listening, you know, we still support her as well. We don't want to get any beef with anybody, so...
No, they could be future guests on the show, so we want to be careful.
Yeah, I have her booked right now for next month. Tentative. Top 10 breakup songs. So one that I put as an honorable mention, just because I feel like I have to... and I'm guessing it might be on one of your guys' lists, was just Super Mario World from Super Nintendo. Great, great game. And it was kind of like Mario 3, where you had the map and you could pick the levels, but you know, had the red blocks and the blue blocks and the yellow blocks. A lot of fun, and it was the first time I ever played as Yoshi. I know Yoshi was on Nintendo games, but Super Nintendo was the first time I ever used Yoshi, and I will still play it to this day here and there. We have it downloaded on our Wii U, and it's just one of those games that just is never not fun. What do you guys think of Super Mario World? Is that going to appear on any lists tonight?
It might.
All right. Cool. Cool. All right. Well, then we'll save your thoughts for that one. But Brad, how about you?
It did not make my list. Actually, you know, I think we'll talk more about Mario later, but the 16-bit, like, since I was really heavy Sega, I do have some Super Nintendo games on my list, but since I was really heavy Sega, that's one Mario game that actually the first time I really dove into it was also on my Wii U through the virtual console. I think I beat, like, the first world, and then, like, I just never went back to it, but because I kind of felt like, you know, I should probably play this. You know, I have a deep history with the 8-bit games. And I love all the most recent ones, and I've played them a lot with my wife. We do co-op with them. But that actually is one generation where, and that's just one particular game, we just never really played.
Well, the Star Worlds are just pure hell. So I'll share my thoughts on that when we get to it later on. So, all right, guys, let's get into our official lists. Here's how we're going to do this. Guys, I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 40. Brad, why don't you take a guess?
14.
All right, Andy?
29.
The correct answer was 16. This is a 16-bit game countdown. Come on, guys. Brad, you were closer.
Good. I was close.
Why don't you start us off with your number 10?
Okay. First, I'm going to give you my one other pseudo-honorable mention. I'm just going to throw it out, then I'm going to move right to number 10.
Oh, okay.
And it was Michael Jackson's Moonwalker for the Sega Genesis. Played it in the arcade. My buddy, this is the first arcade game I ever beat because he just would have bags of quarters, and we beat it. So, you know, it's pretty different on the Sega Genesis, but growing up in high school, I had some friend that she was really into Michael Jackson, and I remember that we bought that game, and I never got rid of it. I always had it with me. It's actually always had some value to it, too, and then it was spiked, you know, also after his death, so I thought I would throw it in there as a little honorable mention. But
all right, hang on. One second.
Yeah.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
I'm going to change it up a little bit. I'm going to start the list myself and give you guys my number 10. It was Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. I am not kidding. Michael Jackson's Moonwalker is my number 10. So I figure since you mentioned it, I might as well follow up with it and talk about it. So, yeah, it was on my list. It's a fun little game for Sega Genesis. Stupid, but in a camp way. You know, like if you've never played it, basically you have to dance people to death. You know, and throw your hat at people and stuff like that. I have some sentimental reasons for ranking it. It, I think, was my dad's favorite video game of all time, along with Castlevania.
Nice.
Two very odd games to put together. But it was a fun game, you know. Is basically, you're Michael Jackson, and it's if you've ever seen the Moonwalker movie, it's pretty close to true to form. To the Moonwalker movie where you have to just rescue kidnapped children. But it's a fun game, too. You know, I think a lot of people joke about it, but if you sit down and actually play it, it's got some good gameplay to it. So I figured I'd give it the sentimental ranking. I always save my number 10 or 9 for a slot like that. So we're going to give Moonwalker a point. Andy, have you ever played Michael Jackson's Moonwalker?
No, I have not, but I remember seeing it in the video store.
Yeah. It's a game that definitely catches your eye because... It's Michael Jackson on a video game, you know. So, and I think a lot of times when you have like a celebrity's name on a game, it's because the game's crap. But I think this is an exception to the rule. This is a game that actually was pretty fun, right up until the last level where all of a sudden you're in a spaceship, and that's takes a weird turn. So, but yeah, okay, so that one's my number 10. So, Brad, now you can continue with your list.
All right, so my number 10 is X-Men for the Sega Genesis. Right, this came out in 1993. Right around this time, I was pretty into comic books, and they kind of had, like, the X-Men reboot was around that time when they started back over at number one. And I remember playing, like, the god-awful X-Men game for the Nintendo and, like, just wanting to, like it, and it's just really bad. And there were just not good superhero games out there. But this game was pretty darn good. I mean, it's a little frustrating. I actually fired it up today, but it's the, you know, you can turn on and off Wolverine's claws, and there's a meter for that goes down as you use his powers, and you can alternate between that. There's four different X-Men that you can use. It's pretty challenging, but at the same time, I mean, really awesome graphics. I think the music's awesome, and actually, one quick novel piece I'll put about it is that it's one of the only games that can't be emulated and kind of put onto different systems, because there's a part in the game where you have to hit the power button and turn the system off and then turn it back on.
Really?
And you can't do that, you know,
yeah,
unless you have it in a Genesis and with the actual cart. So it's pretty unique like that. So
wow. I'm glad I had you on this episode, because you were one game in, and I'm already like, oh yeah, I forgot about that game. That was cool.
Pretty so, good, right?
Yeah, X-Men was a cool game. So, Andy, how about you? Did you ever play X-Men back in the day?
Yeah, I did, but it's one of those games where I couldn't make it past, like,
it was very hard.
Well, because it was hard. It was like the Savage Land, I think.
Yeah, and the X-Men arcade game was a lot of fun, too.
Oh, that is a ton of fun.
Yeah, if we're talking X-Men games, the X-Men arcade game, the four-player game, was really good. But, yeah, X-Men for the Sega Genesis is a good game to start off our list. So we got X-Men and Michael Jackson. I'm glad you explained that Wolverine's claws had, like, a meter, because when you said you could turn them off, my brain immediately said, well, why would you do that? So,
right.
But if you have to kind of pick and choose when they go on, so that makes sense. So, Andy, how about you? What's your number 10, man?
I was thinking about when you said bad celebrity games. I was thinking about going with Shaq Fu, but I went with Earthworm Jim instead.
Oh, Earthworm Jim. Okay, cool. Now, this is a game that was on both systems, and that might show up on a couple lists. So which system did you have Earthworm Jim for?
The Super Nintendo.
Super Nintendo. Okay, cool. Tell us a little bit about Earthworm Jim.
I don't really remember too much, but I remember that I loved it, and it's like it was like really bizarre animation, almost like Ren and Stimpy, but it was like you were like, he had like this big, like huge superhero body, but he had a little worm head, and he could like spit at people.
Yep.
I think he had a ray gun too, or something.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on Earthworm Jim, but he's going to be a little higher on my list, so I'll wait a little bit to talk about Earthworm Jim. Brad, do you want to talk about Earthworm Jim now?
Didn't make my list, but I did play the Genesis version. Okay. Obviously, the controls are a little wonky, but it's fun and pretty good camp humor, and it's hard to not like it. Like, it's just a cool game.
Right.
And actually, they re-released it for the PS3 on the PlayStation Network.
Oh, wow,
you can get it
cool.
for a couple bucks.
Yeah, I remember it was so cool. Unique that it spawned a cartoon show, too. Like, they made an Earthworm Jim cartoon for a little while.
He was kind of like another video game mascot. He just wasn't exclusive to one brand. He was on both. So
right. So yeah, definitely a fun game that I will be talking about a little bit later on my list. So I'll save my thoughts. So Andy, good choice there with Earthworm Jim. So let's move right into our number nines. And since I started with number 10, Brad, now I will let you start a number and give us the first number 9.
All right. So my number 9 is Donkey Kong Country for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, cool.
This game just visually at the time was astounding in what they did with it. And even later in the system's life, it was still kind of state-of-the-art graphics with it. If you're familiar with the Donkey Kong Country games that have come out since then for the Wii and the Wii U, I would say that they are spiritual successors, sometimes a little bit more challenging than others.
They're, challenging?
The Wii U game is hard.
Oh, yeah.
Tropical Freeze game is hard. My wife and I, we quit on that one in, like, the third world.
Yeah, I just got angry.
The one on the Wii, we made it pretty darn far. I think pretty far. We didn't beat it, but this, you know, so because I had that connection to them recently, I wanted to make sure I included them because it's such a novel series, 16-bit series. There are three games. Actually, I actually have all three of them here in my office. And they were, you know, really cool platformers, and I do like platformers, and they have a little bit of collecting to them too, and some decent challenge. So,
cool. Yeah, I which Donkey Kong game was it? I don't know if it was for Wii or Wii U. Were some of the levels, it was just like black and white, and you kind of saw your shadow. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh man, I'm trying to think offhand.
It was either Wii or Wii U, but those that game angered me. Like it was fun, and then all of a sudden you got to like just. Pure impossibility.
Some of the mine car levels in the Wii game were where I tapped out.
Infuriating
was the mine car levels. They are challenging platformers.
It's like the you said spiritual successor. It's the spiritual successor of the Battletoads races. You know, so
that's a great callback.
Yeah, Andy, are you a Donkey Kong guy? Have you played Donkey Kong Country?
I'm going to be saving my thoughts for much, much later.
Cool. Yes, excellent.
And my thoughts on Donkey Kong will come a little bit later, not as late as Earthworm Jim, but yep, later on. So we'll talk about Donkey Kong some more. Cool. That makes me happy. So, Andy, why don't you give us your number 9 then, man?
This one, I think it was another one that was on Super Nintendo and on the Sega, but I'm going to go with the Super Nintendo version. It was Aladdin.
Okay.
Hmm.
Wow, Disney's Aladdin, correct?
Yeah, I really liked the Disney games, like The Lion King, and they had a Jungle Book, and then they had Aladdin.
Yeah, they were great, and I'll tell you what, actually, the Genesis game is actually notably better than the Super Nintendo version. One of the few ones where, like, it's a little bit different, too. You usually think, like, oh, it's a licensed game, they ported it to both systems, but they're actually different games, and the Genesis game is really, really good, and I'm a little upset I didn't put that in as an honorable mention because that is a great pick.
Well, let's just say this. I will be talking about Aladdin later.
Man, I love that. This is going great.
It's funny, man. We talked about how we might just not see any overlap at all. And right out the gate, we are just sharing all kinds of answers. But yeah, mine will be the Genesis version. So I guess we'll have to make a ruling right now, guys. Do we just lump them together point-wise?
Yeah, lump them together.
I think so. I mean, same general experience there. So, Andy, let me ask you this. So far, both of your honorable mention and your lists, Super Nintendo. Were you not a Genesis guy?
Well, not really. Like, I was always a Super Nintendo kid, just a Nintendo kid in general, because I had the NES, and then I had a Game Boy, I had the Super Nintendo, and then I had the 64, and I only played Genesis when I went over to Buddy's houses.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I did buy one, like, I think it was maybe 10 years ago. I got it off eBay. And I did buy a couple games, too.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's definitely growing up, you had to pick one or the other, and you had to take your stand on what team you were on. I was probably a Genesis kid early on, but Super Nintendo won me over in the long run. I think that's the best way to put it. You know, Sonic really got me from the start. But, you know, as I look at my list, Super Nintendo probably is on there more, and I think their library just ended up being a lot bigger, so... Brad, how about you? Team Super Nintendo or Team Genesis?
For that, I was Sega all in. Right. Yeah, all in with Game Gear and then the Genesis, and then we'll talk. So
yeah. So did your Game Gear did the battery die within an hour?
You know what? That is a common thing with the Game Gear. It gets a lot of crap for that. But honestly, I always use the AC adapter. Like I remember, my forearms just falling asleep from laying on my bed, on my stomach, playing it. I always had it plugged in, and we had a car adapter. So when we brought it in the car, I always plugged it in. I don't think I ever put batteries in that thing. It took six or eight, and it was awful.
Yeah.
But I always used the adapter.
Yeah, I think maybe Genesis and Super Nintendo were neck and neck, but I definitely think the Game Gear, just in terms of looks, just killed the Game Boy.
It did, but man, you and I are in the minority there. I mean,
we definitely
no traction.
Are.
It was
definitely
a Vita fan today.
I bought my son a PlayStation Vita 2 years ago, and I was like, "This is the coolest thing ever. He's gonna love it." Never played it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it got used as a. You can use them as a controller at least. So. But that's about it. So, all right, well, since I'm going to talk about Aladdin later and Earthworm Jim and Donkey Kong later, let me give you guys my number 9. It was Mortal Kombat 2 for the Sega Genesis, And there's a reason I went Genesis over Super Nintendo, because Genesis had blood, which was quite the controversy at the time. You know, Mortal Kombat, of course, a lot like the Street Fighter games, but you could rip heads off and kill people and do fatalities and things like that. And, of course, it was bloody. And Super Nintendo didn't have the blood. Guys would just sweat when you hit them. So that for that reason alone, I'm going with Mortal Kombat 2 for Genesis. Also, I like Mortal Kombat 2 because that's you said a lot more characters. And it was, you know, the first, like, fighting game that I really, really got into. I liked being Reptile was probably my favorite go-to guy. Everyone else liked Scorpion, Sub-Zero. I liked learning the fatalities and stuff. It's funny because I remember so many codes still to this day, but I can't remember any of those fatalities. They were hard to pull off, but if you could, man, it was a sight to behold to watch some of those death scenes. So, guys, what do you think about Mortal Kombat 2? How about you, Brad?
Well, another iteration in the series is higher on my list.
Okay, cool. All right. Andy, you Mortal Kombat guy, I know you put Street Fighter as a honorable mention.
Oh, yeah, I played Mortal Kombat a lot, but, like, I think they all kind of run together, like, yeah. Which one is which.
Yeah, definitely. So who's your favorite Mortal Kombat character? If we talked about Street Fighter, who is your Mortal Kombat person?
Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero. Brad?
He even had, like, a game of his own, didn't he, on some system?
He did get a spin-off on the PS1. Nintendo 64 era.
Wow.
That was a terrible idea, but you know, Sub-Zero and Scorpion, because they could throw stuff just like Ryu could. So
yeah. Reptile was basically the weaker version of those three, but as we talked about earlier, I just always kind of liked the not as popular picks. I just kind of like I viewed Reptile as the indie darling. You know, but yeah, I thought Reptile was pretty cool. You know, he's like Scorpion, but he would spit like poison at people and stuff like that. So Mortal Kombat 2 makes my list, and that kind of rounds out our number nines. We're just trucking along here, guys. I feel like maybe once we get to the top, we'll spend some time on some of these games we're just skipping over right now. So let's move into our number eights. How's that sound? Andy, give us your number eight pick.
This is one game where you guys like the sports games, and this is one of my sports picks, but it's really not a traditional one. It is Looney Tunes B-Ball.
Huh, okay.
Interesting.
I don't think I've ever played that one, so you're going to have to fill us in and tell us what you did on that game.
It was like NBA Jam, because you had like 2-on-2, it was like street ball, and you had Looney Tunes characters, and they were like playing on a court in like, I guess like... It was like a street court, and you could do these like neat little moves, like NBA Jam. You know, you could do the dunks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You had like different funny moves that each character had. Like I remember Taz, he would swallow the ball and he'd spit it out for like 3-point shots. And then even Marvin Martian, like you could earn like a move with him where he would throw the ball up and it would have like a magnet attached and he'd try to like stick it to the backboard.
That's pretty awesome. So I'm guessing this was for Super Nintendo, correct?
Yeah. You would like, I guess you'd run around and there'd be little jewels on the court and that would get you more like, I guess, money and you could like turn in the jewels for those moves.
Oh, okay. Now I've never played this game, so I don't have much to add to it. Brad, are you familiar with this one at all?
Actually, you got me there, and I like... and we'll talk about it way, way later. I like NBA Jam and NBA Jam clones, or spin, you know, type similar style type games. And I actually not familiar with that one. So you stump someone who generally does a lot of retro sports gaming.
Did it, Andy? All right.
And I'm going to have to check that one out.
Cool. I'm wondering if that came out like around the time of Space Jam, possibly. I mean, Looney Tunes playing basketball.
I'm not sure, but I actually did go to Wikipedia, and I clicked, like, list of Super Nintendo games just to kind of refresh my memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pretty much every game that I've picked, it was weird. They, like, all pretty much came out in, like, 1994. So it might have been before Space Jam, I think, if it was 94.
I wonder if we just discovered the inspiration for Space Jam. Like, maybe that's where they got the idea.
Yeah.
Like, this game that nobody played. They're like, that was a really good game, and nobody liked it. How can we get people to notice it? And then they just wrote a movie about it, put Michael Jordan in it, you know?
It's one of my favorite games of all time because it was just super fun, like NBA Jam, but with Looney Tunes. And they put
That sounds fun.
I think you could even do something where you could make, like, an eclipse and the screen would go black so you could, like, fake out your opponents or something.
That's awesome. Yeah, the tough thing about games like that is because it's Looney Tunes, so it's a big property, it's probably never going to be, like, released on, like, the PlayStation Store right. or anything, you know, for you to go back and play it, which we'll talk about something coming out of the break there that really bums me out. So, okay, so cool. A game that Brad's never heard of. I'm pretty impressed, Andy. Yeah. Nice choice. So, I'll give you my number eight, and it's from Super Nintendo. And kind of like a Double Dragon type game, it was called Final Fight. And this is a game that I rediscovered again thanks to my Wii Virtual Console. I downloaded it. Basically, like Double Dragon, just a side-scrolling beat-em-up. A little cheesy, you know, the mayor's daughter gets kidnapped and her boyfriend has to rescue her. Or you could be the mayor, Mayor Hagar, who is a lot like Zangief from Street Fighter II. Yeah. He was my go-to. And it's just a fun game where you fought, you know, all different kinds of guys. And, you know, some were big, fat, like sumo guys. Some were roller skating, you know, ninja types and stuff. Just a really fun beat-em-up that was challenging enough to where you couldn't just play it and beat it in an hour. Sometimes you'd lose and get really frustrated, but I had fun with Final Fight. Let's start with you, Andy. Have you ever played Final Fight? And there was more than one Final Fight, so I'm ranking, I believe, Final Fight the original.
I didn't pay attention to anything you said because I was laughing at the squeaky toy.
Yeah, that is my dog being let back inside. I apologize, fellas. My dog, who is normally sound asleep by this point, is on the couch going berserk, eating some kind. I don't even know if that's one of the dog's toys at this point, but whatever. So, Brad, how about you? Final Fight fan?
Yeah, Final Fight fan. And actually, if I can segue into my number eight, and then we'll talk about them both.
Is it Streets of Rage?
It is.
All right.
Which is the better version of Final Fight, and I think the best 16-bit beat 'em up. I didn't specify one. I'm going to say the 2 is probably the best. And this is a weird thing where I only played them at friends' houses or on the Game Gear, but I know like the Genesis games, and I don't actually have them. I haven't played them in so long, but they were so memorable.
Yeah.
Because I played Double Dragon a lot growing up, too. And, you know, I mean, in this one, you've got pipes and you're knocking people loopy. And it's, I think it's better than Final Fight. I think Final Fight, I actually have a Final Fight CD for the Sega CD. Okay. That's actually probably the best version of Final Fight. And I still think it is better than it. And so, yeah, that's my number eight. Have you played, do you have Streets of Rage higher?
I don't have it on my list because I knew there was more than one. And for the life of me, I could not remember which ones I played and which ones I didn't.
Yeah,
and so I'm like, well, I'm just going to rank Final Fight, I guess, because I knew I played Final Fight 1. But Streets of Rage, I remember being the smaller kid on the roller skates.
Okay.
That's the kid that I would use.
Because you like the non-traditional character.
Right.
You just go for like the...
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I ever played as the kid on the roller skates. So.
Okay. Andy, have you ever played Streets of Rage?
I don't know. It sounds really familiar.
Yeah, it's one of those games. I think you can get it... if you buy for, like, the current generation systems, if you buy, like, those Sega discs that have, like, 20 Genesis games, I think one of the Streets of Rage is on that. You know, it's got Sonic on the cover, and you can get, like, Altered Beast and all kinds of games.
I'm going to let you know. Let me look that up, because I was thinking about that later.
I do think that one of the Streets of Rage games is on that. Because
I think two of them are, maybe.
Okay. So, but, yeah, I was a fan of Streets of Rage, and I was a fan of Final Fight, and they're very, very similar. You know, just beat people up, pick up weapons. One of the things that I always loved about games like that is that if you just found food in the garbage, it made you healthier. You know, like Streets of Rage, you could find full hams, you know, like gigantic hams that you would eat and get all your health back. So, yeah.
So on Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection, which is, it came out for the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, it is probably... As someone who also really likes to collect like collections of games on disc, it's probably the best ever. All three of them are on that.
Oh wow, cool!
That set.
And that's $20 brand new.
Yeah, and I have it for the PS3. I would honestly probably get it for both just to have it. It is awesome.
Yeah,
and I am going to. There's Yeah, so I'm going to talk about some of the titles on there a little bit later, but that the fact that all three are on there, I mean, there's my in to going back into playing them.
Right, yeah, it's a good pickup, and those games are easy. What's cool about them is they're easy to figure out, and they're challenging enough to where you can't, like I said, you can't just breeze through it and not die and beat the game like some of the beat-em-ups could happen. You'd have to be pretty stealth with your health and things like that. So, whenever I talk about beat-em-ups, though, I have to go on a side tangent. The stupidest thing ever in the history of video games was Double Dragon 2. If you played co-op, so Andy, let's say you and I were playing together, and I have 5 lives left, and you suck at the game, and you have 0 lives left, and you die, it takes one of my lives away, which caused a lot of fights growing up with friends and a brother. The worst idea ever in the history of video games was playing with someone who sucks at the game and they can basically squelch all your lives off of you. So, Double Dragon 2 is the only game I know that ever did that, and boy, did I hate it just for that reason. But that was an 8-bit game, so anyway, so enough about that. So, all right. So, Final Fight and Looney Tunes Basketball and Streets of Rage all finish out our number 8. So, let's move into number 7. And since Andy kicked off number 8 with some basketball talk, I will kick off number 7 with some basketball talk. Brad, we talked about this earlier in the week. I'm going to go with one of my sports games, and I'm going to go with NBA Live 95 for the Super Nintendo. I could probably pick a lot of the NBA Live games. I went with 95 because just for some reason I have more memories of that as a kid. You had a good Charlotte Hornets team. You had Alonzo Mourning. You had Akeem Olajuwon. You had Shaq. It was different looking for the very first time than the NBA games had been. I just remember playing the crap out of this thing. And I still buy the NBA games. I buy 2K still to this day. I'm a big basketball game fan, and NBA Live 95, along with a game that didn't get ranked, NCAA College Hoops, I think it was called, for Super Nintendo, were the two games that really got me into basketball in the video game sense. So what are you guys' thoughts on NBA Live 1995, or any year specifically? Brad?
I'm going to talk about it way later.
Really? 95 okay. Specifically?
I marked it 95-96. Yes, okay. The 95. Although 96 is probably the better game of the two of them. But yeah, I'm going to be talking about that later in the hour.
Awesome. Very, very cool. So, Andy, this one was not released in 1994, so I'm guessing it's not on your list, correct?
I had the NBA Live 95 or 96 for PC, like the only PC game I ever had.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's just I don't know what it is that made me remember this one more than other iterations of it. And maybe when we get to it, Brad will have some insight into that. But, man, one thing I remember is if you played as the Phoenix Suns, you just murder all your friends because like Thunder Dan Marley and Charles Barkley and stuff. So,
you know what, Jordan, actually I am going to talk about it now because I just realized that I misnumbered and I wanted to talk about it because similar to Andy, my initial experience with this was on the PC.
Oh, okay, cool.
And it was an amazing PC game. And when Justin Rosero gets around to listening to this, he's going to nod along because it's actually this weird thing we both have in common where, like, it was all I played after school back then was 95. I mean, I destroyed that game. We used to, you know, that was the first game ever where, like, I could download, like, rosters on the PC in, like, 1996, 7, and, like, knew the guys that would, like, update them, and you could put them in, and you could change the, you know, they had greatest hits, you know, great, you know, all-time teams for everybody back then, like, and so the reason why I am going to rank at number 7 on my list is because I really didn't have too much exposure to the 16-bit versions, because up until, like, NBA 2K series on the Dreamcast, like, the PC games were so much better than the console versions, I never played them. So I think you remember 95 because it really is seminal in that, you know, you have that the view of the court, kind of that angle.
Yep.
And I'm missing what the name of that is now. It's just terrible.
Yeah, but it wasn't just side to side. It was like
Yeah, they had that angle,
yeah.
And they went from like you went from like your Bulls versus Blazers, and then your NBA showdown into this like brand new engine. And they use this engine on some other things, and I'm going to actually talk about it way way later in a different different game that uses that engine. Okay. But that's probably why. I mean, it's just. I mean, if I had to rank like all-time seminal sports games, like it's up there pretty high with how it changed the genre for what is my favorite sport to play on video games. So,
well, cool. I feel justified in picking 95. Then I thought maybe it was just an arbitrary year, but I remember I got it for Christmas one year along with six or seven games. And remember, you'd get a lot of games for Christmas. There's always kind of one that took the title of the game you played the most, and NBA Live was definitely that one that year for me. So. All right, cool. Andy, I'm guessing that one's not ranked on your list, correct?
No. I do have another sports game, but it's okay. Not of the lot.
Well, why don't you give us your number seven then, man? Since Brad kind of adjusted his rankings, that's your number seven now,
correct? That's my number seven, yep.
Okay, cool. So, Andy, what's your number seven, man?
We had kind of sent a message back and forth about wrestling games, and I didn't want to load up my list with wrestling games, so I went with one that we didn't talk about, though. I went with WWF Raw.
Oh, okay.
Number seven.
WWF Raw.
I guess I went with that one over the Royal Rumble because I think I played Raw a lot more, and I remember all the Coliseum videos had, like, the secret codes from Todd Pettengill on there.
So, fill me in, because I don't remember a ton. I remember Royal Rumble. Who could you play as on Raw?
Raw, it had... It had Bam Bam, it had Luna Vachon, Owen, Brett, I think it had like maybe 10 or 12, so there was HBK and Diesel and Yokozuna and Undertaker.
Okay, I'm Googling WWF Raw for Super Nintendo now. I'm sure I remember it, I just have to look at a picture, you know?
Yeah, it was the same engine, but it had like a red Raw like ring apron,
gotcha.
And you could a bucket in addition to the steel chair.
Oh, I see 1-2-3 Kid.
Yeah.
Lex Luger. So was Luna a playable character?
Yeah, it was really weird. She was like the only female in there.
I don't think I had this game, you guys. I don't think I ever played this one.
Really?
Interesting. Wow. Okay. You know what's crazy? I don't know why. I just totally thought of a whole set of games that should have got ranked. Wow. Okay. We'll talk about that coming out of the break. I got to write that down and circle it. So anyway, so Brad, how about you? Have you played WWF Raw?
Yeah, you know, so I'm sure Chad's going to appreciate this. You know, my origin story of becoming a wrestling fan, I'm joking, is really didn't get into it until late 97, which was strictly in, like, WWF Warzone N64 game wheelhouse, so I never played any 16-bit wrestling games. I have a couple, like WCW Super Brawl I thought looked pretty cool. That's probably one of the more recent ones I picked up, but I don't have any experience with them. Not a super fan of like that style when you going back to it versus what we had, you know, in the Nintendo 64 generation, which will probably be like eight other podcasts on their own. So,
yeah, I'm looking at the. I found like an image of the back cover of the box for this game, and here's what it says. It says WWF Raw slams your senses with 24 megs. Of the most ruthless Matt Mayhem ever, the hottest WWF superstars, all new superhuman mega moves, and more in and out of the ring action stand between you and the championship belt. So, Andy, was that the goal of the one-player thing, was to win the title, basically?
I would
assume, you know.
So I used to do Royal Rumbles, like, all the time,
yeah.
And I don't know if you did the same thing, but as soon as they came in, I tried to throw them to the ropes and then clothesline them out.
It's so weird that Luna Vachon was a playable character on there. Why? Like, I'm thinking 1994, like, where's Tatanka?
Yeah, or, like, Adam Bomb or something.
Yeah, that's pretty strange. Revolutionary of them, though.
Yeah.
And now, were the rosters different for Genesis and Super Nintendo? There's, like, eight people listening that are, like, screaming into their...
Yeah, I know for a fact that IRS was on the Genesis. That was Royal Rumble for Genesis, so I'm not sure about Raw.
I think Raw was the same on both, but the Super Nintendo and Genesis versions of Royal Rumble, they did, like, differ.
Okay. Wow. And, you know, now I'm talking about it. This was, I think, beyond 16-bit. I think it might have even been PlayStation 1. Was it WWF? Was it In Your House? Was that a game?
Yeah, it was PlayStation. I remember that game.
Okay, and that one was, like, really cartoony and stuff,
right? It was more combat.
Yeah, because it was kind of like the WrestleMania, the arcade game.
Oh,
it was style, but they just updated with more wrestlers.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm looking up some WWF Raw for Sega Genesis, and doesn't look that different. So, okay, cool. Yeah, I never played that one because I had Royal Rumble. I guess that was just the one that I had, so I didn't get both of them. So even Jeff Jarrett, I'm surprised, wasn't on the 94. Was he around the 94?
Yeah, yeah.
So
I remember the Mega Moves, and they were, like, tough because, like, you could do one where I think it was, like, Diesel or somebody. You could, like, do an uppercut, and they would actually fly off the screen and then fly back down and hit the ring.
Wow. Okay.
Off the camera or something.
Okay. You know what's interesting about those games is, you know, there was only so much you could do with wrestling games when you have, like, especially with Genesis, a remote with three buttons. You know, there's not a ton you can do on there. So, Brad, how about WWF? Did I already ask you about WWF Raw? Yeah, you're not a big expert there. So, neither was I. So, we will move along, and we are trucking now, fellas. We are already onto our number six on our list. So, Andy, why don't you keep things going and give us your number six as well?
This is one that I think already got mentioned as an honorable mention. It is Super Mario World.
All right. Yeah, good game. So tell us what you like about it.
Well, I think I am younger than you guys, and so I stick to mostly the cartoony games. And this was, like, really up my alley because it was like you had Yoshi for the first time. You could, like, ride around on him and, like, use your tongue and suck up the little Koopas. And then I liked how there was the Ghost Worlds and then, like you said, the Star Roads. So it was just cool. It's like I spent hours playing this game.
Those Star Roads just were so hard, weren't they? Like, to the point where there's some video games where I want to go back as an adult and be like, I could beat those games now. And I still don't think I could beat the Star Roads to this day if I played them. So, but yeah, Super Mario World's a ton of fun. Brad, I know you're talking about how you kind of dove into it later on. Any thoughts on Super Mario World that you want to add to it?
Yeah, just, you know, I was a huge Mario 3 guy. It's the first game I ever beat.
For sure.
Like I said, yeah, I just kind of skipped that generation, the only generation of Mario games that I skipped and didn't go back to. But I do think that, and I didn't know too much about the Star Wars. So, but it's funny because you brought up an interesting point about how, like, you think you can go back now and be like, oh, this game must be so easy now that I've been playing games for so long. And then you go back and, like, you know, lose two X-Men in the first level and are like, wow, I stink at this game still, so.
Yeah, well, I think the ultimate example is that of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, you know, the most impossible game maybe ever made in history. So Scott Criscolo claimed in a chat that he beat him once.
I mean, that's a pretty big boast.
Yeah. We might need like a YouTube
video.
That's
some pretty good chops. Yeah. I would like to see that recreated.
I'm not saying he's lying. I'm just saying
fabricating.
He's lying.
Yes. He used the code. Let's just make that clear. He probably used the code. We've all done that.
Sure. Hey, you know what? Something else that was cool about Mario World? It was the first Mario game, I mean, besides Warp Zones, where you could beat the level in multiple ways. You know, like you could do it straight through the end, or you could find like the secret ending to the level, which is how you got to Star Road.
Yeah.
And unlock different parts of the map and stuff. You know, that was a really cool thing. And especially in the Ghost House, there was always like that really tricky way to, you know. I once saw a meme online that kind of blew my mind where someone posed the question, are all the ghosts in the Mario Ghost House the souls of all the lives that Mario has lost? What do you guys think? Is that what the afterlife is? Like we die and we just go to a ghost house to haunt plumbers?
I just think there's a thriving ghost population in the Mushroom Kingdom. You know, there's bigger ghosts, there's little baby ghosts. I mean, I'd imagine they have normal families and whatnot.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it really is a desolate world when you think about it. I mean,
those levels. I mean, I don't know anybody that openly like is like, "Oh, thank God, it's a ghost level now."
Yeah. Yeah, quick.
They're like a necessary evil.
Turn around for 8 seconds. Yeah. So, yeah, those they're cool visually, but man, they were tricky. That and then the levels where you would have to swim through like a whole sea of fish. Were really tricky for me. So, yeah, definitely a good choice, Andy. You might be a little younger, but I think the kid and
us
all,
great choice.
Yeah, we all love some Mario. And if you don't like games like Super Mario World, I don't know why you play video games, because, you know, that's exactly what they're meant to be. So, I'll keep things going with my number six, because it's a game we've talked about a little bit earlier. And here's where I placed Donkey Kong Country. Was number six on my list. Like you said, Brad, visually, it was one of those games that when it came out, you were like, wow. It just looked so much better than anything you'd seen before, and it looked so different, especially Donkey Kong himself, who we still knew as, you know, like Donkey Kong from Donkey Kong, the Atari mm-hmm. game and stuff. And it looked like 3D, and it was just such a really cool game. And the idea of Diddy Kong, who you could tag in and out, I always thought that was kind of cool. You could just switch back and forth between who you wanted to be. I loved when you could collect the three golden animals and unlock the secret bonus level with that animal, like the rhino or the ostrich. Or
yeah.
There was another one, too. Was it like a porpoise?
I thought of this today, and I remembered three, and I looked it up, and there was a fourth one. It was a rhino, an ostrich, I don't even remember.
There was some rhino, kind of water animal.
Swordfish.
Swordfish.
Oh, yeah.
Frog, I think. Frog.
Oh, yeah, it was a frog. Yep, okay. Yeah, and that was a lot of fun, and that was a game that... I feel like, Brad, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I feel mm-hmm. like this was kind of later in Super Nintendo's run, like a little closer to the N64 coming out. Am I right there? Or maybe like more right in the middle? Because, no, I guess they made like three of them, didn't they, for Super Nintendo?
The first one came out in November 94. That's pretty late.
Yeah.
I mean, then the Super Nintendo came out in 1991.
Yeah, so
it's been around. November 94... I mean, it's kind of right in the throes of the 16-bit. I mean, we didn't get into PlayStation and stuff for like another 2 years, but it certainly was. You kind of had like your Super Mario World and all that stuff, and then it was like Donkey Kong was like the next big IP for that. And they did put out three games, and I want to say
I don't think I ever played the third one. Don't think I ever had the third one. But the first one is definitely like it was game changing. You know, it was one of those games that when it came out, you would get friends to come over and you'd all play together, you know, and you didn't even mind having to take turns because you liked watching people play that game.
Yeah, that's a great point, and one that I will make a little bit later on when we talk about some superlatives. I think that's an awesome point. I'm going to come back to it. The Donkey Kong Country 3 came out in November of 96, so I'm guessing they came out in 94, 95, 96.
Okay, yeah, 96 is point, really pushing it for Super Nintendo.
I think the Nintendo 64 was out by then.
Yeah, it sounds about like that, because I think I got my 64 in 97. I got it the year I graduated high school. So
It released in the end of September 96, so okay. Dixie Kong came out 2 months after the Nintendo 64 release.
Wow, okay. So yeah, Donkey Kong Country, definitely a game I liked. I know Andy mentioned we're going to talk about it later. You want to talk about it now, or is it still even higher on your list, Andy?
It's higher.
All right, cool. So Donkey Kong is going to get a lot of time tonight, and I'm fine with that. It's well-deserved, so... We'll come back to Donkey Kong and revisit that a little bit later. In the meantime, let's keep moving with our number sixes, Brad.
Yeah, so my number six is, we're going to go, speaking of IPs, we're going to jump into the Sonic the Hedgehog here.
Oh, cool.
And I was flirting back and forth with if I wanted to use the original or if 2. I mean, 2 is probably the most popular. It was a very popular pack-in for the game. You had Tails that you could play with. Mm-hmm. I know I've played more of 1. And again, this is another one where I played a lot on the Game Gear. Completely different games, but then like my one friend had it, so we played a lot there. So I think I'm going to go with 1 for this, but I'm going to try to talk about the whole series unless people have it higher on their list.
No, I actually don't, and that's kind of why I didn't, because I couldn't pick which Sonic to rank.
I felt it needed to be represented on here. Andy, do you have any of the Sonic games on your list?
No, I don't. But
Andy's,
I remember,
Andy's a Super Nintendo guy.
Dark day for Sonic the Hedgehog. Dark day for him. I will say, yeah, so really 1 and 2 were the only ones I was really into. 3 was, I think, more of the same, probably graphically the best. And then they had the whole Sonic and Knuckles, which was a game, and then you could also put the older games into it. and then it would you could play as Knuckles in the original games. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a game, Sonic and Knuckles. It looks like kind of like something that has an adapter on the top, and you could put the other games on top of it. So it was pretty cool. Obviously, they had to put a lot of money into those ones, but I would say the first and the second one probably were, I mean, the first is probably the more seminal, and the second has certainly sold the most and was really good. And they created some pretty cool offshoots. And we talked earlier about that Sonic collection, and you can find all those games there. And if you want to pick these up, you don't want to get the original hardware. They're all on there. And then Sonic 3D or Sonic Blast. And then actually, I really like Sonic Spinball. I like pinball games, and Sonic Spinball is kind of like a pinball platformer adventure game. And it was a cool little, didn't do very well commercially, but it's a cool little Sonic-themed game for the Genesis.
Yeah. They've tried to kind of recreate Sonic with Nintendo, with the Wii and stuff, and I feel like they're just kind of, I don't know what it is about, they missed the mark a little bit, because it just doesn't recapture the magic of those first couple Sonic games, you know. One thing I like about Sonic was it's so easy to play, you know.
Sure.
You could get like, I always think of my mom growing up. My mom was like, literally the only game she played was Tetris. Or Frogger, if I want to go even back before, you know.
Nice.
But she didn't play video games. But she could play Sonic. And the reason why is because as long as you had a ring, you weren't going to die.
Right. And a really cool life system.
Yeah. So, you know, like little kids who are just learning video games could play Sonic. And not necessarily be good at it, but you could play for a while without immediately losing 5 lives and seeing the game over screen. You could run around and not really accomplish anything, but you could be playing the game for a while, which I thought was really cool about Sonic. And yeah, I was like I said, the only reason I didn't rank it is because I couldn't decide which one between 1 and 2. I would probably say 1, just like you did, just because it's more, you know, it's the first, you know. Not necessarily that the first is the best, but sometimes the first is the one we remember for a reason, so yeah, definitely give some love to Sonic there. And guys, just like that, we're halfway done with our list. Pretty cool. So here's something I want to do before we go to break. I want to give a late honorable mention. Because when there's so many games, there's some that are just going to get purely forgotten. And as we were talking, and we weren't even talking anything about it, but in my brain, a light went off. I loved the Star Wars movie games for Super Nintendo. Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, all three games were super, super good. And if I would thought of them, I probably would have ranked one of them. But didn't think of it till we were already sitting down and recording. Guys, did you play any of those games?
Yeah, I played the Super Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, but I don't think I played Super Return of the Jedi.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, they are fun. I remember it was one of those things where I'd always die, like the big Jawa thing. You had to like jump around that.
Same here. Definitely same here. So, how about you, Brad?
Yeah, my sister had a Super Nintendo, and I remember we had them. I remember they were pretty challenging, and I always couldn't figure out like why like they came out in like 1993. Like, what was big about Star Wars when they're like, you know what, we need to put these games out on the Super Nintendo?
Yeah,
because it was way before the remakes were made. You know, in like 96, 97 or whatever. With all the hype, they actually re-released Super Star Wars for the PS4.
Really?
It's probably like $2, $3. So upgraded to the PS4, it was something to tie into the movie. And when Star Wars Battlefront came out, they ported it to to Crossbuy. You can get it for the PS4 and the Vita. I have it for both because I got it in a bundle with a bunch of PS2 Star Wars games that were like $10 for all of them. So you can still play that one on your current systems, but it was pretty challenging when I was playing through it. And that was probably only like a month ago.
Yeah. See, that's a game just like we were talking about where I feel like I'd like to revisit and be like, okay, now I've got 20 more years of gaming experience.
Yeah, damn right.
Belt. Let's see if I can, like Andy said, let's see if I can get past like the Jawas sand crawler this time. So, but yeah, that was a game that it just popped in my brain, and I wrote it down in circle. Like, I got to mention Star Wars because I spent a lot of time on those Star Wars games. And anger was unleashed a lot. I was probably more Sith than Jedi while playing those games. But that's okay. So we're halfway through our list. We've got another half to go. We're going to take a break right now, listen to some commercials. And when we come back, guys, I got some questions for you before we finish up our countdown. So take a break, play some of your favorite games, download some stuff. And if you want to buy some games, especially, what's it called, Brad? The Sonic Ultimate Collection?
Sonic Ultimate Genesis Collection. Just, you know, click on over the Amazon link on PlayStationNation.com. And I know that we like to make... somewhat of a light that I pimped this thing around, but I do want to make it very clear that this is not something that is for my benefit. It is actually one of the ways we use to kind of support our writers and contributors to the site. So, you know, if you're ever doing that, we always appreciate it. No, and I don't look
cool
at what
thing.
You buy, and I don't care and judge. So,
I do. That's why they don't let me see it. So. But it's a very cool thing because it doesn't add anything to your bill, and we just get a little bit of money to help pay some of these bills to make sure these podcasts keep going. And, It's worth your trip. If you know you're going to be going to Amazon, go on PlayStation first, then click the Amazon link, and then buy your video games. All right, so buy some video games, listen to these commercials, and then come back and listen to some more.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStationNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Welcome back. Thank you for pausing your game and unpausing your podcast. We are back with our rank and file countdown of our top 10 16-bit video games. With me is Brad Woodling and Andrew. Andrew Helene. Andrew, can you be called Andrew Helene?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Actually, when I got in trouble in the neighborhood, like, my mom would yell out Andrew, and so some of my friends from back then, who I'm still friends with, they always call me Andrew.
Well, I'll stick with Andy. You've always been Andy to me. So, Andy, something we talked about before we got on the air in our chat was since video games we were talking about stuff like that. I used you guys to be thinking of your most your favorite video game of all time. What's just your favorite game? Doesn't even have to be 16-bit. What's your favorite game ever?
Well, my favorite game ever is on. It's still to come in my top five.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh.
Or should
foreshadowing.
I?
Foreshadowing. Very good.
No, hang on to it. Hang on to it. Well, how about this? What's your favorite video game series of all time? Like, do you prefer Mario's or?
All of my top 10 kind of came like right away, but the one I was thinking of was this like question you gave me about the all time series, mm-hmm. and I'm like, because there were some series where I maybe only played the first one, I didn't play all of them, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna have to go with the Lego series.
Yeah, that's a good choice, man. There's just a lot of good Lego games. What's your favorite of the Lego games?
Probably the Indiana Jones one, because that was just super fun. I loved those movies, and I loved how you could, like, whip them, and then they'd bust apart.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a cool game. I had that for, I think, the Nintendo Wii. And what's cool about that is, again, kind of like Sonic we were talking about earlier, like, if you're a little kid, like, my boys played it when they were very young, and they didn't have to suffer that frustration of dying, per se, because you just fall apart and you immediately rebuild. So it's like, you never have to deal with that game over screen. You know, you can play it basically as long as you want to. So, yeah, Lego games are a good choice. I didn't even think of that for a game series.
Really? Yeah, my wife and I, we played through and beat a lot of them, like 100% of them, which is like hours
that's
of work
fun to
going
do.
Back.
That's fun to do with the Lego games.
I would say, like, Indiana Jones 2, the first two Batmans we did, all the Harry Potter ones, Star Wars. It was weird. There's a glitch on the Star Wars one where, like, you get to Return of the Jedi once and it freezes. There's some issues with the 360 version of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think of some of the other ones now.
They made the Hobbit.
Yeah, we did the Hobbit, but not to 100%. And then we weren't really too into the Lord of the Rings. I think we did them, but it was kind of like begrudgingly. That was more of mine than hers.
Yeah, I didn't love those ones. My son Jake and I got 100% on Lego Marvel, which was really good. I think we have Lego Marvel 2, but I haven't played it myself. I know the kids have. I've seen the kids playing it, but I haven't played it. But Lego Marvel was really good. It kind of took the Lego Batman and Batman 2 and just extend it to that open world sandbox style really
the only thing I couldn't do is some of those races are so hard.
Yeah, they're really hard. Especially the one up by the helicarrier.
Yes, that's it. The Thor one. You do it with Thor and you race through that city and you cannot make a mistake for like 2-3 minutes.
You really
it's
can.
Hard.
Yeah, so. But that was a fun game. Yeah, Lego games, man. I didn't think of those as a series. I guess because they're so different. But just the Lego games in general, very, very fun. So, Brad, how about you? Best game ever, best series ever?
Best game ever, I'll go to Super Mario 64, which falls into something you talked about earlier about like just being fun to watch someone play.
Oh, cool.
That was the first game that ever hit me as like, that was a game where I remember my mom watching us playing and just being like, this is just fun to watch. And then the other one is Castlevania Symphony of the Night for the PlayStation, which was an awesome platformer. My favorite Castlevania game, a game that I 100%ed back in my college days. Not that it was incredibly difficult, but I still found it as a pretty good accomplishment. And so those are probably two games that stand out to me that I really enjoyed outside of, you know, we'll talk about later when it comes to the series. So.
Sure. For me, actually, probably my favorite game of all time is actually fairly recent. It's from PS3. I got to go with Red Dead Redemption.
Nice.
It's just one of the coolest games, and maybe a game that I got sucked into the story more than any other game. It really plays out like a movie, a good movie. And it's one of the few games where I actually like playing online with other people, because you don't have to worry about like hackers and glitches and things like that. Just a great, it's basically great. I describe it as Grand Theft Auto, but you're a cowboy. You know, just an awesome, awesome game. And I wish they would re-release it on PS4, like a remastered version or something. That's probably my favorite game ever. my favorite series ever, I had a hard time thinking of it. But since I was talking with a friend of mine just a couple days ago about this, I'm going to just say the Tony Hawk games, specifically Tony Hawk 1 and Tony Hawk 2. I'm dying to play those again. And that's where I mentioned earlier, you guys remember I mentioned I missed my Sega Dreamcast. And that is specifically why.
Awesome games on the Dreamcast. If we did a Dreamcast show, both of those two, I am 100% with you with those. They were awesome.
Yeah, Andy, did you ever play the Tony Hawk games?
Yeah, I played like one of them at a buddy's house, and we spent the night, and we just played it like all night.
Right,
it was
And that's what you do with that game, is you just play it all night long, you know?
So I remember, is that one of the first games that had, like, rock music in it, too?
Yes. It'd
be like all these songs cycling around while you're playing. It was just cool. To, like,
I think that's part of the issue of why it hasn't been, like, re-released or something, maybe. I'm not sure.
Well, they re-released it for the Xbox Live Arcade and PSN. It's called, like, Tony Hawk HD. Like, the first game was re-released. I think that the music changed. Some of the music was the same, though, if I remember. Mm. But, yeah, it had a ton of awesome licensed stuff. So they did redo the first one.
It's funny that... Sorry, you go ahead.
Yeah. No,
I was going to say, it's funny that Andy mentioned the music, because when I think Tony Hawk and I start talking about it, in my brain, I immediately hear, "Bass! How low can you go?" Like, I don't know why. That song always just would inevitably would play while you're playing Tony Hawk, and you just have to sing along with that line. So,
I mentioned the Lego game series, mm-hmm. And you were saying that maybe you wanted to say something because Taylor Swift might be listening. Or
yeah, she is a regular listener.
Yeah, hi Taylor.
Hello.
Any game developers are listening, I want to pitch this idea right now that I've had for 5 years. Lego James Bond, because I think with 20-some movies, you could do, like, so many different levels, so many different bad guys, and then you had, like, all the secondary villains. James Bond, Lego, I want that.
That would be actually really awesome.
Yeah, because then you got all the gadgets, too, that you can use.
Yeah. Well, I think
you run into an issue with the with it being kind of designed towards kids. And then maybe not being the James Bond audience that you would think. But, boy, there's a lot they could do with that.
Yeah, they really could.
So fun.
Well, that's what I like about those Lego games is all the characters that you can unlock. I mean, like you guys said, there would be so many. Just the bad guys alone from 20-plus movies. Are they at 30 at this point? I mean, there's so many. And we need another Lego version of Batista. So, you know, why not? So... All right, guys, let's get back to our list. Let's talk 16-bit. There's our little venture outside of 16-bits. I still play video games to this day, and I can't really imagine that I'm going to get to a point where I'll stop. I can see maybe down the line stopping with the new stuff and just saying, I like my old stuff better. I could see myself getting to that point, you know, as we get into virtual reality and wearing goggles and things like that. I don't know. That just doesn't seem like it's for me. So.
Not for me.
PlayStation 4, I can't imagine it getting much more than that. But anyways, let's go back even farther than PlayStation 4 to 16-bit. We are halfway through our list. And I'll tell you what, guys. I'll start it off because my number 5 is one that was already mentioned once, and I said I was going to bring it up later. And it is for the Sega Genesis, and it's Disney's Aladdin. And I'm glad that Andy mentioned this game because, you know, let's be honest, we're three grown men. so to be talking about Disney's Aladdin may seem like an odd choice, but man, that was a fun game. Really fun levels. The carpet level, Aladdin just running through the streets. And Disney kind of hit a nice formula there with the Lion King game and the Aladdin game. And I want to say there was one more, maybe like Tarzan around then or something?
I think it was Jungle Book.
Was it Jungle Book? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I think so.
But all those games were pretty fun, you know, and they're kind of the same sort of concept, and they're just really easy to pick up and play. But the Aladdin game looked really, really good. It had really good graphics for the time, and, you know, of course the music for an 16-bit system isn't going to be great, but, you know, you had that Aladdin soundtrack, which is really, really memorable, and the main boss, Jafar, was actually very difficult on the Genesis version, but he wasn't so difficult that, you know, you'd throw your controller and break it or anything like that, which is kind of where I like it. I like to have a challenge but not be so overmatched that I just quit and run away in anger. So Aladdin was a really, really fun game for me, and that's my number 5. Obviously, Andy mentioned it earlier, and I know, Brad, you said it's not on your list, but you did speak highly of it.
Yeah, the Genesis version, the big difference was so Virgin Games made it for the Genesis, and Capcom, who we know from Street Fighter, they made it for the Super Nintendo, and they actually were outworked on this one. I know that Sega had a license, I think, with Disney for some of these. God, what the heck? I'm trying to remember what it was. But they had a kind of a deal with it, so maybe they got a better games out of it. I think all of the Disney ones were better on the Genesis than the Super Nintendo, but that's for another show. But the carpet ride in there was really cool. Mm-hmm. It was a true to the movie. The music was really good, too. That's a great choice.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun playing that game, and that's a game that, again, like we talked about, probably never going to be re-released because, you know, it's a Disney property and stuff like that, but I think I might still have it floating around somewhere, probably at my mom's house, so next time I'm over there, I might excuse myself to the basement and dig through my Japanese wrestling tapes and hopefully find some Genesis games, because that's where all that stuff is now. So that's my number five. Brad, how about yours?
So my number five, maybe on Andy's list later, maybe yours, Jordan, is Legend of Zelda Link to the Past.
It is on mine later. I'll talk about that down the road.
Yeah, so high level, you know, probably one of the greatest games in the 16-bit era by far, maybe even overall. I have pretty good memories back to my sister had it. I actually have that copy. It was even the player's choice, and usually I'm not really too big on like those player's choice re-releases, mm-hmm. but it was the one that we had played, you know, 20 years ago now, so that was fun. I remember beating the light world with her, and I don't think we ever beat the dark world, but it was cool. And we'll talk more about it later then, but yeah, that's my number five.
Okay. Andy, how about you? Do you have The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past on your list?
No, I wasn't really like a role-playing game guy. Dang. I was like scrolling.
Well, I have to tell you, Zelda is more of an adventure game than a role-playing game.
Yeah, like I played the one for the NES, I think.
Okay.
I think I played them any systems beyond that.
Okay. Well, like I said, I'm going to save mine for later because it does appear later on my list. So we'll just keep moving then. And Andy, why don't you give us your number five then and finish off the fives?
I think this is only going to be on my list because I was a Super Nintendo guy. And I think this game is only on Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. It was Marvel War of the Gems. Like the Infinity Gauntlet, and you were going after the stones.
Oh, wow. Okay. No, that is not one I've ever played. Tell us about it.
You had like five different characters you could choose from. I think it was Hulk, Wolverine, Iron Man, Captain America, and Spider-Man. And you would have to go through different levels, and you could fight, like, I think Doctor Doom's castle was one of the levels.
Cool.
And every so often you could get one of those gems, and now they've been in the movies as like the Infinity Stones.
Mm-hmm.
So one was mind, and one was like speed, and one was time. And if you use one of those, it could enhance your abilities. So if you were Hulk, you would want to use, I think, the speed one to make him faster. And it was just like, it was pretty cool because you could pick your different superhero, and there were so many different levels to go through. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, I've never played that game, so I'm Googling it. It looks really, good for a Super Nintendo game. Just the pictures I'm looking at. I mean, the graphics are excellent. So, yeah, it does look like a beat-em-up. Like, right away I see Thanos on there, which makes sense if you're going for the Infinity Stones. So, did you ever beat the game, Andy?
Yeah, I think that's one of the few games that I ever actually defeated. And went
okay. Cool. Yeah, sometimes I wonder if those games that we beat, if that's why it ranks higher or lower. Wow, there's a pretty cool picture of, was Juggernaut in this game?
Yeah, I think there was a whole bunch of different bad guys from like either Spider-Man villains and Captain America villains. Cause cool. And then they had like, I think, doppelganger. So you were fighting like almost like zombie versions of Daredevil and Spider-Man and stuff.
Well, we'll have to get the hard-traveling fanboys to weigh in on this one. Let us know if they've ever played War of the Gems. So Greg Phillips and Nick Duke, if you guys are hanging out with Taylor Swift right now, let us know what you thought about this game, because this is one I've never played. Brad, how about you? Are you familiar with this game at all?
Yeah, neither of these two. I say two because I think Mutant Apocalypse was like the one after it for the Super Nintendo.
It's two.
And I think they're both kind of similar. Both by Capcom, too, which, you know, good developer, that's for sure, 16-bit wise. So, yeah, I haven't played any of those ones. My Marvel gaming, really, outside of the X-Men, when I talked about, really took a leap when the fighting game genre on the PlayStation, when, like, Children of the Atom and Marvel superheroes and stuff came out.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, when you were talking about X-Men, There was X-Men 2, like the Clone Wars. I almost put that on my list because I liked that more than, I guess, the first one, because I think I got farther, so I liked it more.
Nice.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that, to a difficulty level in a game, making it more enjoyable. Because, I mean, I don't think anybody likes a game where you can just breeze through. And I've talked about this already on a few games, but you got to find that right balance where there's a challenge to where you feel, you know, you feel a sense of accomplishment in beating it. But you can beat it at the same time, you know. So you got to find that right balance when it comes to video games. So, and I think X-Men for Sega Genesis did not have that balance because I could never get anywhere in that game, man. That was so hard. So, all right, cool. So that rounds out our fives there. Zelda, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes, Aladdin, and Marvel War of the Gems. So we're talking about some big properties now. So let's move on and go to number four. Andy, why don't you kick off our fours there?
I'm not sure if anybody else had this one, but it was also a 1994 video game. Pitfall: The Mayan Adventure.
Oh, I didn't have it, but I liked it. It was a fun game.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Tell us about it.
Well, I really liked the Indiana Jones movies, and it was kind of almost like that, where you were like a guy and you had like a whip and you could go through different levels like temples and swing on your whip, and then there'd be like, I think, different levels where you were in, like, a mine cart, and you could, like, go through around, like, different, like, I guess, what is it, caverns and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, there was at least one spot. I want to say there's a couple spots where you could do this, where if you found the right place, you could kind of transport and play the original Pitfall.
Yeah. Yeah.
For Atari, so.
I remember that one. I played that one.
Oh, you never played Pitfall: The Mayan Adventure, huh, Brad?
Not the Mayan Adventure, no.
Okay. That was definitely a Super Nintendo thing. So your Super Nintendo dark spot is showing
blind
here.
Spots.
Anyway. Yeah, blind spots. Yeah, blind spots there, are on display here. Because I had Pitfall: The Mayan Adventure, basically Pitfall but 16-bit. You know, like they took a game that worked and said, let's kind of keep the same basic elements and make it bigger and look better, which is kind of what a lot of those people tried to do with you know, the next gen games and stuff like that. Sometimes they fail miserably, but I think Pitfall kind of did well. I can't say that it was a huge success because I think it was the end of the Pitfall series. but yeah, it was fun. I want to say they released a Pitfall game for the NES. And if
there certainly was a PlayStation one.
Yeah, and those ones, but this one was pretty fun, and it was a little cartoony, right, Andy?
Yeah. I want to say it was like the sweet spot where it was challenging, but it was a good challenge because I got really far in it. I don't think I ever beat it, but I spent hours like just going through all the levels.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and that was a game that was actually for both systems as well. There's a lot of games back then that, you know, both systems, NES and or Super NES and Genesis. I didn't have it for Genesis. I had it for Super Nintendo. So a cool looking game, cartoony looking, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It looked, you know, cartoonish. I remember you would fight like leopards and of course, obviously alligators because it's Pitfall. So yeah, fun game, good choice, man. Didn't make my list just because honestly I kind of forgot about it. So cool. And Brad, it didn't make your list as well because you're kind of not familiar with it.
Nope. So.
Okay, well, why don't you tell us what number four on your list is, then?
Number four on my list is one we kind of talked about earlier. It's Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
I'm actually going to say, 16-bit-wise, is I played the heck out of that game on the Sega CD. So, now again, I was a late adopter to these things, so I was not sitting around with these brand-new $400 pieces of junk add-ons. But I still clearly remember KB Toys clearancing Sega CDs for like $25 maybe, and you know, getting all these games, and I still have the same one and the Mortal Kombat, and I you know, you talked earlier about your favorite characters, and I named you know Sub-Zero and Scorpion, but I remember playing like everybody in that game, and I want to say I played it on the Game Gear first. I don't know why I don't have it in my library now for that or what happened to it, but I know we. And I know that as the later ones came along, like, I kind of looked at them, but I don't know, the smaller roster, like, was more intriguing to me. And I remember, like, trying everybody and learning all their moves and, like, really playing the heck out of it. And I had to, you know, make a decision, you know, here if I was going to do Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. And I decided to go with Mortal Kombat for this one. And, again, yes, definitely with the Genesis, definitely with the blood. Mm-hmm. Wasn't ever a very good Fatalities guy. But, yeah, the original Mortal Kombat coming in number four for
so
me.
This is Mortal Kombat 1.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so with only like 7 or 8 people,
yeah,
playable characters like Sonya and Johnny Cage and things like that. Okay, cool. Yeah, Mortal Kombat was just, it kind of took Street Fighter and said, let's make it like, they sold it as it was for adults, but it was for kids because we thought it was for adults, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, oh, it's blood and Sonya's hot, you know, stuff like that, so, yeah.
Have you played any of the more recent ones?
The last one I played was for PS3. Well, actually, no. The last one I played, I don't know what system it was for, was the one where you could also play as DC characters.
Yeah, that's for PS3. That's the last one I played, too, which is Mortal Kombat versus DC.
Yeah, and I loved being the Flash. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a cool game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a cool game, and that's a cool game to play with friends. Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, any of those games I think are fun with friends. I sucked. I was always the one that lost, but that's okay, you know. Got to have somebody that loses. Andy, I know we talked about Mortal Kombat 2. I can't remember if you said Mortal Kombat 1 was going to be appearing later on your list, or I can't really remember what your thoughts were too much, so I apologize. Weigh in again on Mortal Kombat.
I don't have it on my list, either on my list, okay. And they kind of run together for me. But I loved watching wrestling, and I'd see the commercials for Mortal Kombat because you had the guy in the street, Mortal Kombat.
Yeah,
and it was just cool, those commercials.
Yeah, I remember too. Not only was there fatalities, there was also like friendship finishers, and there was one where that you turned them into a baby. I don't remember. Was it called Babality?
Yeah, Babality. Yeah.
And there were, and you could also turn them into animals. Correct? Maybe not. Maybe that was like later down the line, but the friendship one was so dumb. You know, there was a character named Baraka in one of the Mortal Kombat games who kind of had like his arms would turn into swords, and his friendship, like his sword arms would start furiously chopping, and he'd make like a little like cutout of like people hugging or something like that. So, yeah, pretty cheesy, but you know, obviously memorable since I'm still talking about it, you know, 20 years later. So, all right, so Mortal Kombat for the Sega CD. So, jumping systems a little bit there, and I've got
still in the 16-bit realm. It's all fair,
definitely. Yeah, and you know what? You also mentioned another nostalgia trip when you mentioned KB Toys. Man, I miss that because, like you said, you would hit up that store, just waiting for the stuff to go on clearance in KB Toys. You know, KB Toys clearance section was like a gold mine for not just video games but toys as well. They always had great stuff. So
nice.
All right, so my number four is another one we talked about earlier, and I really had a hard time even picking between Super Nintendo and Genesis because I feel like this is a game where it was really pretty equal, and I went with Earthworm Jim as my number four. I had a lot of fun with this game. Goofy, it was funny. It was like one of the first games that was funny. And like Andy said, like you're almost like a Johnny Bravo body type. But you could pull your worm head out of the suit and like whip and swing across like Indiana Jones and stuff. Just a really fun game. Pretty difficult. And it's a lot of fun. And I think that's been re-released. So that's a game that you could find now pretty easily and play again. But just the cartoonish nature of it and like the villains and even the character, Earthworm Jim. You're basically a worm in a giant muscle suit. You know, like I remember in the very first level of the game, you whip a cow with your worm head. And it shoots the cow up into the air, and then like later on in the level, the cow lands. It's just goofiness for the sake of goofiness, but fun as well. And at the time, it looked really awesome way back in the day. It was one of those games that just really looked great. Had some trouble with the water levels where you kind of go around like in this like plastic ball. Those were always difficult, and for that reason, I can't rank it any higher because it did give me some frustration. But Earthworm Jim is definitely one I think back on fondly of to my childhood. Spent a lot of time playing Earthworm Jim growing up. So, Andy, we've already heard your thoughts on Earthworm Jim. Brad, I know you chimed in a little bit. You want to say anything else about old Earthworm?
No, just that, you know, it's definitely was challenging, but had that humor that was really intriguing, a pretty cool mascot. Both versions were pretty similar to each other. I want to say music was better in Super Nintendo. I don't know. I got to think back on which was the better, but I don't think you could go wrong with either. I did play a bit of it on the Genesis. I remember when it came out, my a friend up the street had it. So,
yeah, one thing, just certain things about games you always remember. I remember there would be levels where you were kind of like trying to catch the bad guy. I don't remember what his name was, but you're flying on a rock and you'd have to hit the bubbles and stuff. And when you hit that boost, he'd always go, "Whoa, Nelly!" So it's just like so stupid, but it was fun, you know? So Earthworm Jim, a lot of fun. So that finishes off our number four. So let's move on to our number threes. I will kick off our number threes with one that I know Brad's going to want to talk about a little bit. I'm going with Genesis, and I'm going with NBA Jam. He's heating up. Boom shakalaka. Such a fun game. I first played it in the arcade. Arcade version, probably better. But you didn't have to pay a quarter to 50 cents for each quarter of the game.
Each quarter. God, yeah.
Yeah, I hated that so much. Oh, what a ripoff. But, man, NBA Jam was such a great game. And they just ported that from the arcade to home. And they got it. They nailed it. You know, two-on-two goofiness. And, of course, you know, if you're going to talk about NBA Jam, you got to talk about, you know, typing in, like, Clinton and being able to play as Bill Clinton and Al Gore and, you know, like, so many secret NBA Jam characters. Just goofy and he's heating up and he's on fire. So many quotes. NBA Jam is maybe my favorite ever. And I would say it is my favorite ever sports game that deviates from just a straight sports game. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of came out with NBA Street for PlayStation 2 and 3. And it was kind of similar, but NBA Jam was the innovator, and it was my favorite. They even re-released it for the Wii, and it wasn't the same. NBA Jam for Genesis, really, really love that game. Brad, what do you think, man?
Yeah, it's my number two.
Okay.
On here. It was close to being number one. And if you ever Google my name and my favorite game back a couple years back, I was on staff at a site, and I chose NBA Jam as my favorite game of all time, but it was really more of an homage to the series overall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kind of phased in and out of NBA Jam and NBA Jam Tournament Edition. Tournament Edition had like all the
Clintons. I think Tournament Edition is probably what I'm ranking.
Well, in Tournament Edition had, you know, the third player where you could you could swap in. You know, the classic one for me is still my number two. Same thing you said. I remember seeing that in the arcade and being, like, dumbstruck. Like, I just watched people play.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this? Like, and it sucked because you always had to play the Mavericks first. So, like, you never have to see, like, a cool matchup or anything. And because that's a hard game. That's one recently where I was like, oh, I'm going to go back. And I bet you I can beat the computer. No. And I'm pretty good at NBA Jam. With the re-release started on the Wii that came out on the 360 and the PS3 also. And then they put out a PSN and Xbox Live Arcade version of it that was updated a little bit. It had all this online stuff, and they had updated the roster. So I'd say it's updated as of like 2012, 2013. And that's a really cool and fun game. And a buddy of mine out on the West Coast, we would log on and just wreck people. Like, not like six games in a row, just destroy teams.
That's awesome.
And I really, so, you know, there's that. That's one of those games. It's really easy to pick up and play. It's easy to shoot threes, and they go in a lot. It's easy to dunk. But, like, timing on blocks and swipes and, you know, shoves and things like that, it can be – and it's frantic, man, you know.
Oh, it really is.
It's not a sports game. It is frantic. It is – you don't breathe. You don't sit down and wait for a play to come out. It is frantic. And, it's fantastic. And the whole launch they did, everybody was at once. I had it for the Game Gear, and then I had it for the Genesis, too. And it was a huge deal when it came to home console. They made a mint off that game.
I bet. Like you said, they release it for everything. And I feel like whatever system you had it for, you got a good game. You know, I preferred the Genesis, but I feel like, you know, there's some games where, you know, one version was significantly better. I don't think you were getting a bad game if you got NBA Jam for anything, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, the Genesis could do, like, the little FMV clip, like in the beginning, you know, like a little video that I don't think the Super Nintendo version could do. But I actually have the Sega CD version too that I played. That can do a little bit more because it's on the CD. When it comes to video, they do more full motion video, as was the style at the time.
So, Andy, I know you've already ranked one basketball game. Is NBA Jam on your list at all?
Yeah, it's my number 3.
Oh, perfect. All right, cool.
cool. I want to deviate from this, though, because you keep mentioning the Sega CD, and there's one game that I always wanted to play on there, but I never had it, but it was like a WWF game. I think it was Rage in the Cage.
Yeah, I actually have that one. Picked it up kind of recently.
The Royal Rumble and the Raw games we're talking about for Super Nintendo, I guess that was the same kind of engine on Rage in the Cage.
Yeah, Sega CD, for anyone listening that doesn't remember, and Genesis kind of did this. Like, you'd have your Genesis, and wasn't Sega CD... Or no, I'm thinking of Sega 32X.
We'll get there if you want to.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and tell us about the 32X and Sega CD, and just fill us in, Brad.
Yeah, so you know, FMV games were kind of all the rage with PC CD ROMs coming out in the early 90s. So the Sega CD came out, and they made two versions of it, just like they had two versions of the Genesis, and it just connected onto your Genesis, depending on the style that you had. It either sat underneath or it sat next to it. I had the Genesis 2 at that point, and so I had the Sega CD 2. It's pretty sleek. And then the 32X was their other add-on, which was a failure, to say the least. Something we could talk about more later. That's another one that I got. I got mine clearance at Toys R Us for $20.
Wow. And you basically plugged it in where the game went on your Genesis.
Yep.
Yeah, so you couldn't get that without a Genesis.
And I think I think there's only maybe 38 games that were released in North America for the system, for the 32X. And you know, at that point, the Saturn was already out, so it was really just trying to tap as much as they could. And then they released the Nomad, which was the Genesis as a handheld. And so not great times for Sega, and they're not in the hardware business anymore. And I'm a Sega guy, and it's a shame. But they had some serious kind of mismanagement in the mid-90s coming off all that the momentum they had with the Genesis.
Yeah, I mean, it really felt like they were an equal to Nintendo at the time. And then once we got to the next generation, Nintendo really pulled ahead and was like, left them in the dust, you know. So I'm looking up Rage in the Cage here, Andy, and... I know you ranked Raw, but man, Rage in the Cage, you could be Bam Bam Bigelow, you could be Kamala.
The Nasty Boys, I think.
The Boston. Head Shrinkers. Tatanka is on this one. So, yeah, I feel like, Andy, I feel like if we meet up next month, we gotta, one of us has to get on eBay first and get a Sega CD so we can play.
Oh, jeez.
And Brad, if you will loan us Rage in the Cage.
I would loan you Rage in a Cage.
We could do like, it could be like a live watch podcast, but a live play.
You know? I would loan you that one. I have just the disc of that one. I don't think I have, I think it's disc only. One of the few. I'm usually pretty big on like having the case and instructions, but that one, I'm pretty sure it's just a loose disc.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it looks fun, and obviously there is cage matches in it, but, Big Boss Man, too, as well, so cool. Cool little roster there. So, all right, so Andy's ranking NBA Jam, but, yeah, nice little side path there that we took.
I have one little anecdote about NBA Jam.
Sure.
I think I had the Tournament Edition and NBA Jam, but I was just going to go with NBA Jam because I figured everybody might have NBA Jam, the regular one, but... the thing was that stood out with NBA Jam was my whole family would play that. Me and my sister and my mom and dad. And here's something. Like, I think it saved your scores. And so it would save all of your, like, rankings if you had, like, you know, like 30-some wins or however losses.
That's awesome. Yeah.
There was something on there that I accidentally hit, and I think it was, like, reset to default. And my dad played the game next. And he wanted to see his wins and losses, and it said 0-0 for everybody. And he's like, who reset the game? Who reset the game? And it was me by accident, and I just kind of shut up. And, like, I didn't I didn't take the blame, so if my parents or my sister are listening to this podcast, I'm fessing up now 20 years later.
You blamed it on the cart just resetting it.
Yeah. Yeah, so like I was just like, man, it wasn't me. I think it was kind of dropped after that. But
I was playing Looney Tunes basketball. Don't blame me. So, cool. All right, so NBA Jam leaps out to the top of our list now, and we are winding things down. Have we all given our number threes? Me and Andy both. Brad, that's your number two, correct?
That is my number two, okay, so I've not given my number three.
Okay, give us your number three then.
So before I give my number three, a couple sports honorable mentions that I'm not going to – I'm just going to list. We're not going to go into World Series Baseball 95. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you – Jordan, you play that series at all?
I don't think so.
Okay. That was one. And then from the Madden series was – spent most of my time with Madden 94 – and 93, and then 96 was like the first, like, I remember getting that game for Christmas, and it was like a new game, and it was like, I really, this is what I want, and so I played the heck out of that one too. But my number three is Coach K College Basketball for the Sega Genesis, which is a pretty big wild card out of the blue pick. It is the only college license game, I guess, where so it had the players in it, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, they just used their numbers, but it was licensed by Coach K. It was EA's only college basketball game in that generation. They skipped like years until the March Madness series kicked off. It used the NBA Live engine. You could play a season, or you could just create a tournament. It had 32 teams and like four greatest teams of all times. You could easily tell like who the real players were. Now, there were some omissions. Like, it killed me at the time that like Georgetown wasn't a part of the game, nor was North Carolina. North Carolina, because Coach K was on it. But like, so you still had, you know, and personally for me, I was a big Villanova fan. So that was like the great Villanova year where they won the Big East and lost in the first round of the tournament. So like, I can still name you like 10 guys on that team, and I still regularly play them. Usually every year right around March Madness, I'll fire it up and try to take a different team, like Joe Smith and the Maryland Terrapins to the Final Four. Tim Duncan, now retired, was Tim Duncan was the last player in that game that was active in the NBA. Ray Allen and Marcus Camby were the other two. They've all now retired, so there are no more active players that were in that college game that was made in, I think it was 95. It used the 95 engine, didn't have the upgrades I think that 96 did, but a little bit tighter than NBA Live 95. But it's clearly, I mean, I've written a lot about it in the past too, and it's definitely one of my favorite games ever, and I had to go pretty high with it. So,
no, that's totally fine. Obviously, I don't think me or Andy ranked it, and that's fine. But I was always a fan of college basketball games, and that's something I really miss about sports games now, is that they don't make college basketball games anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was playing...
Or no, it was 6 years, I guess. Didn't they do 2010 for NCAA, I think, and that was it then? 2K is definitely 2008.
Yeah, so 2008 was the last one I had. It's just a bummer because it really is just... I mean, basketball games are fun in general, and that seems to be my favorite sports game to play. I know Madden is by far the most popular, but I've always been more of a basketball game guy. I never played Coach K college basketball, though. Even Googling it, you know, as you're talking about it, it's not a game that I just don't think I had or my friends had. So definitely looks like a lot of fun. And it has the same look as NBA Live, like you were talking about.
Yep,
you know,
it just has the college aesthetic. It has, like, yep. You shoot free throws, and it looks like you're in, like, a high school gym.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and
same camera angles and everything, though.
Yep.
And, yeah, it looks like a ton of fun. So, you know, what's funny is when I see the disc, I remember old Genesis sports games always had, like, they were a little bigger than the regular Genesis cartridges, and they had the big yellow, like, tab on the side, probably because there's needed more memory or something. I don't know why those cartridges were bigger than other ones, you know, like NHL 93, like, was,
you know, that was big. Just, you know, that was let me think
was
about
it. Was it just EA that did that?
It was just EA that did it, why did they do it? I don't even want to say they had more RAM on the card. They just wanted to be different. They were one of the first third parties that Sega had signed. Mm. So I think that that's partly why, too.
Yeah.
Just had it looked a little different.
Yeah. It makes me think of the old NES because, you know, with the NES, there were so many third-party games. And, you know, like, they would do anything to make their games look different. So, you know, obviously we remember the Zelda, the gold Zelda cartridge, but there was games sometimes that were different colored cartridges and the different shapes and stuff. We had one growing up called Bible Adventures.
The third.
And it was baby blue. The cartridge was baby blue. So any friend that came over, if you're looking through games, what game are you going to see in a pile of gray? But that baby blue game, they're like, "What's that game?" And you're like, "Nothing. I don't know," because you don't want to admit that you own Bible Adventures to your friends. You know? So that was definitely a NES problem, and definitely not Super. By the time Super Nintendo came around, I think they had mostly solved that. So cool. So Couch K College Basketball gets some love, and if you're out there and you're a fan, let Brad know that he's not alone, and that there's some other Coach K fans, and maybe we can get some sort of online tournament. Villanova versus, was Michigan on that game?
Yeah, Michigan was. It was Jimmy King and Ray Jackson were in the game, and then all like that second Fab Four class was in it.
Okay.
Yeah,
so they're good but not great. Yeah, okay, cool. Andy, are you a fan of basketball games besides you know, the NBA Jam style? Did you play like just the straight up 5-on-5 basketball games?
Yeah, I remember one that I played the most was actually Nintendo 64. I think it was like Kobe Bryant, NBA Courtside.
Okay, yeah. I'm surprised Brad didn't go with the Bill Laimbeer Combat Basketball in his rankings, but we still have one to go, so. What a terrible game. Hated that game, man. Awful game. We should do a worst of games. Nah, maybe not.
We could pick some crappy sports games.
We really could, so. I try to keep rank and file positive, though, but if we wanted to. It'd be a lot of fun. So anyways, let's move on to our number twos. Brad already shared his, of course, with NBA Jam. So I'll go ahead and share mine because it's a game that was already mentioned. And my number two is The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past for Super Nintendo. Andy, I think you mentioned you did not have this on your list, correct?
That's correct.
All right, well then, I'll just tell you guys why I loved it so much. I'm a big Zelda fan, always loved the Zelda games. And the original Legend of Zelda came out when we first got the Nintendo Entertainment System. That was the first game we ever got. Most people got the Mario Brothers Duck Hunt combo when you bought your Nintendo. We didn't. We actually got this big book that like had every game that was out for the system at the time. So the first game we ever got was Legend of Zelda. Loved it. Zelda 2 came out. Didn't love it. And then by the time Super Nintendo rolled around and the Zelda Link to the Past, It was just such a good game. It was so big and so it just felt like such a big game, you know. Like nowadays we have sandbox games where you can go anywhere you want and do anything you want. And in a way you could do that with Zelda. You could explore, you could go to the village and like pick up signs and chuck them at people and stuff. And I know there's a part in the game where Link becomes wanted and he's like a bad guy. So if people see him, they like call the guards and stuff, so you could pick up the wanted sign with your face and smash it and hide and stuff. It's just a really, really good game. Some good battles, good dungeons, good weapons, which is kind of Zelda's thing, is, you know, the weapons you get in each level and stuff like that. I did beat both the Light World and the Dark World, Brad.
Nice.
I don't know if I ever got everything. Now, that wasn't a game where you could look up and pause and see if you had 100%, but you know, I know I got all the items. I don't know that I ever got two full rows of hearts, which was kind of like the Zelda 100%. You know, you get more heart containers and hold more hearts. I don't know that I ever got everything, but a great game. Another one that I downloaded on the Wii Virtual Console as soon as I could. I've played it in my adult years, and I still like it just as much, and it's a game where I'll go back and revisit from time to time. And some of the puzzles are still tricky. You know, if I haven't played them for a while, I'll really have to think, be like, how do I get out of this stupid room? And I'll have to try for a little bit, and just a puzzle game, adventure game. A lot of fun with Zelda, so really love that game. One of my favorites of all time. So I had to put it really high on my list, and I know nobody else. Brad already talked about it. I know it's not on Andy, so we will just keep moving right along and get Andy's number two.
It is X-Men Mutant Apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
And is this the sequel to the War of the Gems, or...?
I'm not
or
sure.
Or just kind of similar style.
It came out first or not, or later, but I remember that I was like a Nintendo Power subscriber.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Like, seeing pictures of that game before it was coming out, and I'm like, Mom, I want this game when it comes out. Because the only way I got games was like my birthday or for Christmas, And I remember getting X-Men Mutant Apocalypse, and it's the same style as that War of the Gems, but the one difference was you had five X-Men, but you had to beat each person's like solo level first. Then you could use them in the later levels.
Hmm, okay. So you would beat a guy, and you could use their power.
No, it was like, with War of the Gems, you could choose to go through as Spider-Man, and you could play him for the whole level.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Okay.
If you wanted to switch off, you weren't set for the whole game. But with the X-Men one, if you chose Gambit, you had to beat his level, then you had to beat Beast, Wolverines, and Psylocke, and Cyclops, then you went on to the next level, and you could choose between them for that.
Oh, cool. Okay, interesting. So, this is a Super Nintendo game then?
Yeah.
Okay. Brad, have you played this one?
No.
Okay. I know you mentioned it a little bit when Andy was talking about the last one, just kind of...
Yeah, just kind of in that beat-em-up kind of vein, the sequels. You know, Andy mentioned Clone Wars, X-Men 2. Another game that I distinctly remember the red cardboard box cover of that one, but never getting into it then. I don't know if my hobbies shifted at that time or whatnot, but I actually haven't played any of those ones. Probably worth revisiting, to be honest.
Cool. Yeah, it sounds fun. And, I mean, it's a game that maybe might have some interest now since I think the current X-Men movie is Apocalypse. So, cool. Okay. So there's our number twos. Guys, we have made it almost all the way through this list. We are down to our number one entries for all three of us. And I'm looking at the tally list, and we are all over the place. There's only a couple games really sticking out of the pack point-wise, and then there's a whole bunch with very similar points. So the number ones may make or break some things. So, Andy, we'll defer to you and let you give us your number one first, because I think I may know what it is.
This is my all-time favorite game, and like each time it got mentioned, I got a big, huge grin on my face. It is Donkey Kong Country.
All right, I thought so.
Yeah.
Cool. Tell us why you love Donkey Kong Country so much.
It was just like, I don't know, it was like you guys said. I was kind of in awe of the graphics because I love the side-scrolling things. But this one, it kind of had a 3D element to it. It was still like a side-scroller, but the environments look cool. And then how with Mario, like I love Mario, and he had Yoshi. Well, Donkey Kong, he had four different animals, and so it just seemed like really big. I don't know. It was awesome.
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I love being able to tag out and be Diddy Kong, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Did you ever beat that game?
Yeah, I actually did beat the game, and I remember my dad, he used to play this game a lot, too. I don't think we ever played it together, but I'd kind of watch him, and he'd watch me if we were around. Mm-hmm. And I remember him being off in the kitchen or somewhere, and I beat the game, and I ran around the house. I was like, Dad, I beat the game! I beat the game! It was like a big day. So.
That's awesome. Cool.
I used to love giving my dad updates at dinner. Let me tell you about what happened in Madden 94 today. Now as an adult, I think, like, I mean, he would be like, I don't, I mean, nice guy, you know what I mean? But he was just like, no thanks. And I was so proud of that stuff, too. So that's so funny, Andy.
Well, what's funny about my dad was he was a gamer, but he was always like 3 years behind. So, like I mentioned at the start of the show, Moonwalker was like his favorite, but he had the Genesis in his room because by the time he got into Genesis, like PlayStation 1 was out already. You know what I mean? And so, like, he's like, hey, have you guys played Moonwalker? We're like, yeah, 4 years ago. What's wrong with you? You know? Like, he was like into games, but he was so far behind on us. Like, when he got to Super Castlevania for Super Nintendo, it was like, this is the best game ever. We're like, yeah, Dad, we know. We told you that 5 years ago. So he was just always
good for him, man. I love that story. That's great. My dad was really into the Commodore 64 and all that stuff. I remember playing like Leaderboard Golf and different games with him on there, and we really liked Descent on the PC. And he would always kind of he'd go real slow and take his time through those games like that. So good for him trucking through still.
Yeah, right. So I'm sure if my dad was still with us, he'd probably be at PlayStation 2 right about now. So somewhere around there. I'm not sure. So I'm starting to feel like my dad, though, and that I look at the new stuff coming out, and I'm like, I have no interest. I'm like, I've got my stuff that I want, you know.
That's it.
So
Yeah, cool. Did you guys ever do this where you're playing a game and then it was dinner time and you paused it throughout the whole time?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Forget that. We would go to church sometimes and leave the game on pause.
All you got to do is turn the TV off.
Right, yeah. So the screen wouldn't freeze. Yeah, definitely did that. Especially if, like, you're far into the game. You know, you can't risk, like, saying, oh, I'll get there again. You know, because you might never get there again. So, all right, cool. Now, Brad, my number one, I don't know if our number ones are going to be the same, but I'll let you go, and we'll see if it is.
Okay.
I'll tell you right away if it is.
Okay, so my number one is NHL 94.
Okay, nope, not even close.
Okay. I mean, that's a pretty popular sports game, so I'm actually surprised it didn't make your list. Yeah, so, you know, we talked about the NBA Live series when they came on in 95, and NHL hockey really always for the Genesis was just another groundbreaking seminal series, and 94 took it up a notch. I mean, 93 is still good. I played a lot of 93 too. You could fight in 93. You can't fight in 94, but 94 had one-timers. It was kind of made famous in swingers. The only thing about that game that still gets me today is another one that I was playing a little bit earlier was that, you know, your player rankings correlated to your speed. So, like, all the good players were fast, and all the bad teams were just slow. And so it's so hard to play as somebody like Anaheim in that game. But, I probably went through the playoffs in that game with nearly probably, I would say, like, at least three quarters of the teams in it. And it still holds up. You'll see a lot of the newer NHL games, they always tried to hook old players by being like, hey, we have an NHL 94 mode or NHL 94 controls. You know, just your straight two button, although three button with NHL 94, you could kind of scoop the puck with A and kind of flip it down the ice. And they never correlated that to the newer games, which never made sense to me. But, you know, it was real basic with the one-timers, like I said, were really new. And I probably have logged more hours into that game than any other 16-bit game, so it had to be number one for me. Sure. And, I played a little bit of the later series in 95 for the Genesis and then moved to the PlayStation with it, but that one just still kind of stuck with me. I liked it so much that I'll just leave it with the story is that back in 2012, so people still play this game online. They play it over emulators that can network, and they'll play against other people. Wow. And they always put out new rosters. So you can go to NHL94.com or just Google it and find, like, you know, 2016 NHL rosters and download a ROM and play NHL. Like, they've just completely redone the game. They balanced it better. They fixed some of the gameplay issues, or maybe, yeah, balance is probably right. There's some things they tied up. There's an impressive list. And back in 2012, I had a guy take the 2012 game and press it onto an NHL 94, like, physical ROM. Like, he flashed the ROM onto the actual game. So I have a physical cartridge that's NHL 12 for the Sega Genesis. Wow. and I think it's cool as anything.
That's
so
pretty awesome.
That's how big I was into the hockey ones, and that's another game I think that is just like NBA Jam is one you can pick up and play today, and it's just great.
Yeah, the main reason I didn't pick it was I was never really a big hockey fan, so I didn't play a lot of hockey games. I did have one that was I think it was NHL PA 93. So I think the one that I played was probably the year before that. Which
yeah.
You know, that was a good game. And
that was a good
game. Yeah, like you mentioned, the Swingers, you know, I totally forgot about that movie. But, yeah, they're sitting around playing some NHL 94 in there. So, did not make my list. It's not my number one. Obviously, it's not on Andy's list. But, Andy, did you ever play any of the NHL games or 94 specifically?
I'm not sure on which year, but I do remember it could have been 94. There was that summer where I had to go to, like, a babysitter, and her son had Sega. So that's when I played a lot of those games.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like Sega was just better with the sports games for the most part. And I don't know why that is, but it just seems like when I think of old sports games, I think of Sega more than Super Nintendo. Except for NBA Live, but NBA Jam and the NHL games and even the Madden games, I just always would have gone with Sega, so... But okay, so that's Brad's number one, which means my number one is one that didn't make anyone's list. I thought maybe it might make Brad's. It's not the most popular game in the world, but it's just so fun. I'm not really a role-playing guy, but I still went with a game called Earthbound as my number one overall game. It's a role-playing game, you know, where you know, like, instead of, like, pressing buttons to punch and stuff, you encounter enemies and you choose to hit or use magic or run, stuff like that. But it's just such a fun, fun game. Basically, it's a story of four friends that meet, and some of them you don't even know each other before you start your quest, and you got to save the world from an alien invasion. And a couple of the characters are more well-known today because they're on Super Smash Brothers, you know, Lucas and Ness. A lot of people know them, but don't even know the game Earthbound, you know? Just a ton of fun. It's funny. It's a funny game. It's a lot of comedy in it. It's goofy. It's got cool worlds and cool levels and cool enemies and characters. One of my favorite things about it was when you start the game, you can give your character names, which was kind of a new thing back then. It's like, what are you going to name this guy? You could name him Lucas and Ness, or you could name him, like, Jordan, if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And you could name your whole gang. Like, I could have Jordan and Brad and Andy, and we save the world together. One of the things that I always loved was you'd always talk about, like, you'd always say, what was your favorite food? And you'd put, like, mashed potatoes or something. And one of the sicknesses you get struck with is homesickness. And it'll be like, Jordan misses mashed potatoes, you know? But we would, you know, we were boys growing up. We were like 10 or 11, so we'd always put like wieners and stuff. Jordan misses wieners, you know, like just stuff like that. Like, I'm 36 and I still laugh at that, you know? So it's a game that I have gone back and replayed from start to finish multiple times. And it's a game that I know has a really big online fan community.
It's number one on a lot of other people's lists.
Yeah, it's a really, just a really creative game, I think, is why I like it so much. Like, even, like, the way the game ends, like, it's got, like, monsters and aliens, and, like, your next-door neighbor is this little fat kid named Pokey, and he ends up being just a total jerk who sides with the aliens and stuff. It's just really, really a great, great game. Even if you're not a role-playing game fan, which is one reason why I was hesitant at first to play it back in the day, but I loved it anyways. So, Earthbound's my number one. Andy, did you ever play Earthbound?
No.
Okay, you got to try it, man. It's fun. It'll take a while to complete because it's a long game. So you're going to have to, you know, not in one sitting, but you're going to have to play it over the course of a couple weeks to really get the full Earthbound experience.
I see this Pokey kid, too.
Yeah, he's just this little fat kid. And he's like, he plays himself off as your friend throughout the game, but you know he's just a little turd, you know, and sure enough, near the end of the game, he sides with, you know, the evil Lord Gigas or Gigas or however you pronounce it. So, Brad, I know you at least know of Earthbound. Have you played it? What do you think of it?
You know, I have not played it. Certainly familiar with it. One of the more popular, and so it didn't sell well at all.
No.
And so
and part of it is because it came with a gigantic book.
It did. And if you were crafty and clearanced it back then, you'd be looking pretty good today, because you find one of those complete, you're talking a couple $100 easy. Mm-hmm. The carts themselves in recent years have gone like probably like a 150, 200 now. And they're not, it's not like, they're not rare in the sense of like, there's only, you know, a small run in existence. It's just super popular. So it has both supply and demand going for it. And it really commands quite a price. But I do have it for the Wii U Virtual Console. That was a big release by Nintendo because they've kind of been hesitant to bring it back out in the West outside of the Super Smash Brothers guys. And so they, when they put it out on the Virtual Console, that was a big deal. And then they actually, there's an 8-bit game called Earthbound Beginnings, which is not the original name, but that's actually, in Japan, the series was called Mother. And so Mother 1 is the original Earthbound game in Japan. It was on the Famicom, and they actually put that out for the Virtual Console. So you can get that on your Wii U if you'd like to play more Earthbound, the original game.
I would. Wow. Yeah, I just had a lot of fun with that game. Like, as we've been talking about a lot of these games, I'm Googling it, and sure enough, I Google Earthbound, and, like, I totally forgot. There's one level where, I say level, it's different cities you go to. One of them's just a cult village, and everyone's painted blue. You know, like, Mr. Saturn, I think, is in the Smash Brothers games as well as an item that you can pick up and throw at people. That's from Earthbound as well, so I love that game. I still love it to this day. I knew when we came up with this list, I knew right away this was going to be my number one.
Nice.
And I just had to shape my list around it. So Earthbound's my number one. And as we've been talking, I've been tallying up some points. So guys, now that all of our lists are revealed, I'm going to go ahead and give our official top 10. And it's pretty interesting. Our number one is not what I thought it would be, but I'm happy with it. So coming in at number 10, after all of the points have been totaled up, Coach K College Basketball with 8
right.
points.
Nice.
Finished at number 10. Number 9, we move up a level to NBA Live 95. So we go from college to the pros. That's our number 9. Our number 7, 8, 9, and 10 all had 8 points. So a pretty tight group there. Number 8 was Earthworm Jim, and number 7 was Aladdin. I put them ahead because they did appear on more than one list.
Sure.
Number 6, Andy's number 2, X-Men Mutant Apocalypse, 9 points. Number 5 and number 4 only appeared on one list each, but they were number 1. I'll go with Earthbound at 5 and Brad, your NHL 94 at number 4. Number 3 overall on our list, I actually thought this might be our number 1. The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, finished with 15 points. Number 2, Donkey Kong Country finished with 17 points, which means, according to us, and according to Rank and File, and according to Place to Be Nation, the number one 16-bit video game of all time is NBA Jam with 25 points. And that is NBA Jam / NBA Jam Tournament Edition. Fellas,
yeah.
Do we think we missed anything?
Well, I looked at a list of video games to prepare, mm-hmm. I noticed there was a Three Ninjas video game, so I think that...
yeah, I don't think we missed it, though. So it's interesting. You know what's funny is no Mario games, no Mario Kart.
I just didn't do... I thought about Mario Kart, like, and because I didn't... I started that on the 64.
Yeah.
And so... I have it, but I never.
I think
it wasn't seminal to me, and I really wanted to like push Donkey Kong pretty hard.
Yeah,
as
they've
like
done, they've done better versions of Mario Kart than.
Oh yeah,
done.
it's not great. You know, I mean, it's amazing for its time.
Yeah, it's as good as they could do. Yeah,
right. And I was actually curious too, from a Mario standpoint. Yoshi's Island was one of my last cuts. Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island for the Super Nintendo.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't play that one. So that was an easy one for me. I never had it. So,
yeah.
And I think that was the thing back then, man. There were just so many games for these systems that there was just games that you just never got around to. I remember like our basement when my parents told us to clean up our games. That was the worst thing because we had stacks of these things, you know. And there was so many we never even got, you know. Lots of video games to choose from, lots that got mentioned tonight, and lots that we probably didn't mention. We did a 16-bit countdown, and Mario and Sonic got left off the list completely.
Yeah.
So I think that says something about how good games were back then, and I mean, we still like to play them, and games are still good now, but maybe it's the nostalgia talking, but I feel like nothing's going to beat sitting with your friends and playing some NBA Jam or some Mortal Kombat or NHL or... whatever it was that, you know, spend hours of your day and spend your summer times doing. It was just a lot of fun and a lot of fun to talk about. So, guys, I really enjoyed having you on. Thanks for coming on and talking video games with me. Andy, anything you want to talk about before we get out of here?
No, I'm happy. I'm content. This was awesome.
Cool. All right. And, Brad, what can you tell us about the website? What's going on in Place to Be Nation land?
Well, Place to Be Nation, you know, we appreciate you subscribing to PTBN Pop. You can find Mr. Andy Helena on the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular.
Ooh, you got it right.
It the right way. I know. He gets on me. You can listen to Andy there and a whole bunch of other great shows there. And Jordan alluded to his interview on Lucha Undead, and I know that Justin Rosero's is coming up soon, and my official shoot, Ask Me Anything, one will eventually be coming up on the same show. Once Chad did it, I was jealous, so I was like, I gotta get around to doing it, since we're all gonna be sharing kind of, not dirt on the site, but kind of being, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff, so I kind of wanted to make sure I could get my words in there, too. But yes, P-Team and Pop, and then if you're interested in retro video games, I would recommend two places, RacketBoy.com. They have a really good forum there, one that I'm actually a moderator on.
Is that Racket or Rocket?
Racket. So
Racket.
R-A-C-K-E-T.
Like a tennis racket.
Yeah. racketboy.com. A good forum there for that. And then also for videos and reviews and things like that on retro gaming, I would recommend RetrowareTV.com. The funny story with RetroWare, I did some writing for them right up to Place to Be Nation, and I've met the guys before, and it's interesting because the two guys, John and Lance, that run that site, and they've put out some real successful video series, and they're nice guys. They both know Justin and Scott from their previous jobs, and they both are all from Connecticut, and when Justin used to live there, they all worked together. So, and RetroWare had had some issues where the site wasn't down, but they had lost some of the archives. So for a couple of weeks, our regular writing schedule was tabled, and that just happened to fall into the whole WrestleMania 29 and the Place to Be Nation idea. And so I never, you know, I talked to Lance, and I was like, you know, I'm doing this new thing now, and you know, their editor position came open, and I thought about it, you know, and I was like, now, you know, and we, and here we are 3 years later. And so that was kind of my, but it's a cool site, a lot of good videos. Like I said, there's some writing there, some sports game writing you can find if you search for around the retro gaming horn. You can find some stuff on some older games like Reggie Jackson baseball and Joe Montana football and things like that. Yeah, and American Gladiators, which did not make my list.
That was a conversation we had a little earlier today, was how many failed celebrity names got put on games before they found some that stuck. You know, Joe Montana, Sports Talk Football was mentioned, Tommy Lasorda, baseball. I didn't even know about a Reggie Jackson game. So.
Reggie Jackson was the Sega Master System. He was the first name, big name that Sega signed up. But that was quite some
Reggie
time
Jackson
ago.
Will always be the brainwashed killer in Naked Gun to
right,
me.
Right.
I must kill the queen. So, and OJ will always be the killer from Naked Gun to me as well. So, well, guys, thanks for coming on and talking video games. This is a fun one. This is one I've actually been wanting to do for a while, and I enjoyed the talk, and it makes me want to play some video games. And my family's on vacation without me because I had to work, so I think I might spend tomorrow playing some Earthbound again. I might fire it back up. And
check out that Earthbound Beginnings.
Yeah. You know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to name my favorite food Brad and Andy. So when I get homesick, it says Jordan, Mrs. Brad, and Andy. And I'll think back to this wonderful, wonderful night that we spent together talking video games. How's that sound, fellas?
Sounds good.
Cool.
It's a good way to cap it.
Yeah. All right. So for Andy Helene, for Brad Woodling, and for myself, thank you for listening to Rank and File. Enjoy playing some games.
Take me back to the days. Super Nintendo. Let's take it back, Link to the past, Final Fantastic, Super Scope, 16 bits, making magic, blowing dust out of my Mario cartridge. Super Nintendo, this where my heart lives. Spinning brick, kicking it, Chun-Li joysticking it. Dragon punch every time that I try, so sick with it. Sitting on the living room floor, chopping at chickens with the master sword. This what an afternoon was made for. Remember Link before Epona and Navi? Mario before Sunshine and Galaxy. The first time you saw Liu Kang's fatality, flipping out of graphics so close to reality. Star Fox flipping up that FX chip. Earthworm Jim swinging with his head like a whip. What you know about Donkey Kong Country? That shit was bananas like a barrel of monkeys. Chrono Trigger, all-time best RPG. Follow closely behind by Final Fantasy III. I could never beat Smash TV without entering the codes in my Game Genie. Let's take it back. Super Nintendo.